Tonight on the Infinite Lives Podcast, The Sims, Emulators, Harvest Moon, PS2, GTA 3, Vice City, San Andreas, Shadow Hearts, Ico, Xenosaga, awkward pauses, all on the Infinite Lives Podcast.
Hi, welcome back to the Infinite Lives Podcast. This is John. I am joined today by Dan, as always.
Hey.
And Kevin.
Hey.
And we are down a soldier today. No Dan H. joining us today, so we're going to try and soldier on without him. I think we'll be okay, but
we'll do this in his memory.
In his memory. He didn't die.
Oh, wait. What was that funeral?
He's just sick. You guys are crazy.
Where was that yesterday?
It's just some random person's funeral, I guess.
Damn it. That's dark. See, we're in.
So video games.
It's a good reception, though.
Yeah.
How about them video games?
There was one time I went to... Never mind.
No. All right. Well, tangent over. So,
just starting.
Yeah, last week we were discussing the college years for us, through the end of college years, and
we're slightly beyond college years.
Slightly beyond, yeah, because I mean, it did. There was a lot of gaming that went on during that time because we didn't really do much else, did we?
That's the point of college.
We played a lot of video games.
The what in college?
Yeah. There was the studying thing that we were supposed to be doing, but for the most part, I remember more about video games.
Than I was on the dean's list. Then I was not. Then I was on it again.
Yeah, that's my story. I remember studying. I did that once.
Anyways, so we had pretty much covered full cloth, like our GameCube experience, and we had really gotten into the PC stuff that we had talked about. I know for certain, though, Dan, there was a game that I think we briefly mentioned off-air, but we never actually have gotten a chance to talk about it yet, and that's the simulator known as The Sims.
Okay, so if you're like one of the five people who don't know what The Sims are, it's basically you create several people, you create a guy and his personality and all of those things, and you kind of simulate his life, his or her life, making a house, getting a job, getting married, and things
getting
like
friends.
That. I only ever really played Sim 1. I never played the other one, so I don't know what happened in the series afterwards.
Me neither. So.
Yeah, I think we burned ourselves out on it.
Yeah. Well, and like, it's... I was thinking about it. It's kind of funny that it's one of the most popular games that's ever been made, I think. Like, I think they're one of the
record-breakers, I believe, yeah.
Top-selling games, and just a million sequels. I don't know if they're on 3 or 4 now. And then
they even had three and some expansions.
They even had an MMO at one point,
yes,
which was basically a sex simulator.
Yeah.
A sex chat room.
Did you play Sims Online?
I never played it. I wanted to, but then I heard what it was, and it did seem fun.
Seemed like Second Life, except with less graphics.
I want to say our friend Rick played it.
Maybe. Yeah, he might have.
It seems like a game that he would have experimented with because he liked strange games. Like,
he was on the fringe with some of the games that he liked.
I want to say he was the one who told me about it. But yeah, if you read anything about Sims Online, it basically turned into a cyber sex, like, MMO.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Every fantasy could be fulfilled.
Well, and I think they had crafting for all of these different kinds of occupations, but the most popular one was, like, a sex industry.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's beyond stuff.
Beyond our scope of knowledge.
So,
going a little too far.
Yeah. I remember reading about this. I mean, it's a Will Wright game. It's Max's game. And it's kind of right up my alley because I like simulations and stuff. And I think this is one of the first games where it really tried to have, like, a personality thing where you would pass on genes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There was just so much that I read, and it was just going to be so cool, and I bought it, like, I think at launch.
Same
you,
here.
Or you were the one who bought that game.
Okay. I think I bought it. I think you bought
I
it.
I bought it.
You bought a real copy.
Everybody pirated it.
And then everybody pirated those copies.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty wonderful game.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
no.
It is wonderful when we broke away from what the game is about.
Well, I remember when you would first play it, you would sit down and start creating, you would create, you know, yourself, or an approximation of yourself, and you would try and play through the first couple of times straight, so it was just you, like, trying to live your life, trying to get a job,
try and build your house.
Trying to build your house.
The building the house was always funny because you only had so much money to start off. And you would have these grand designs of a house or what you think like a normal house would look like. And you could only afford so little. And usually it would come down to where you either didn't have a roof because you spent all your money making walls and doors and stairs. I would usually run out of money and not have wallpaper or carpet, and it would just be grass in my living room.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and no furniture either.
Yeah, and sometimes you'd forget to make a front door, or you'd make your kitchen so big that all your appliances were so far away from each other, where when you actually put the, you'd make the room first, and you'd put all the stuff in there, and it would just be huge.
Or one of my favorites is, you know, I'm going to go big. I'm going to have a nice mansion first thing, build my jumbo swimming pool. Then I'm out of money, and I just build, like, pretty much the cabana that I live in.
I live in my swimming pool. That's all. That's
I
all
swim
that
all the time. I am a fish.
So, I mean, it was a cool game because depending on what your character was like, those are the kind of things they'd like to do. People in the neighborhood would come over. You could play multiple characters in a neighborhood, so you could kind of fill out your neighborhood. You could get married.
Yep.
You could have a kid. You could do other hobbies. You could buy, you know, TVs, virtual reality set, paintings, a barbecue, swimming pool. There was even like a huge robust like downloadable item stuff.
Yep, I remember.
Yeah, so you
nice thing on that was items were free. So
yeah, everything was always free, and that was a cool thing. I don't know if they were actually part of EA at that point. I want to say no.
No, I think they were.
They were.
I'm pretty sure that was part of EA. So.
Well, this was part of before EA decided to
microtransaction everything.
So
it's great. Every week you check out the Sims website and. Oh, party balloons.
And there was other people making stuff, like, you know, like, I think one of the first ones, like, fish tank, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the fish tank.
Fish tank, and there was, like, a bird and stuff like that. So there was just, I mean, a lot of stuff. And, you know, your guys would kind of do their own thing. You could also kind of micromanage and try to make them do things. And then it was always great when you would upgrade, like, your bed, because you would
sleep.
All
of a sudden you'd sleep.
Yeah, you could sleep better and faster.
Yep.
And you would be more rested.
So instead of sleeping for 8 hours, you could sleep for like four and still get the same amount done. And then that 4 hour chunk of time, you got to manage to do more stuff.
And then, let's see, what are some of the other quirks in that game? Well, and then you had to manage. It was a freaking bladder simulator game. I paid $50 so I could simulate like my virtual character's bladder because that was a huge part of the game. Yeah. I remember
you spent half the game on the toilet.
Yeah, and especially if you made your bathroom in the far part of the house, or if you didn't have a bathroom on your second floor. Yeah, or you put your bathroom on the second floor and you forgot to put one in the first floor. Your guy would be running around the house trying to go to the bathroom, and that would be like half your day.
And then if he couldn't find one, he would pee.
Yeah, I remember a big party. I invited the whole neighborhood over. We had a barbecue. Everybody was watching TV and stuff, and my guy was—he kept getting trapped in conversations, and he could not get to the bathroom.
Oh,
and
that's
he just,
the worst.
He just peed on the living room floor, and everybody just kind of hung out for a while while there was a big splat on the floor, and. My guy just started crying.
And, all because he couldn't make it to the bathroom.
And what was funny was that you would invite people over, and sometimes they would just stay.
Yep.
Like, you'd have a little party, and then it's like, all right, it's 11 o'clock, I gotta go to work. My guy is hella tired, he's peeing all over the floor, right? I can't drink any more coffee, which was always a bad proposition.
Oh, yeah.
You'd drink the espresso, because you'd be like, oh, I can stay up a little bit, because they would just fall over and fall asleep.
Yep.
And, but, of course, you stayed up running to the bathroom.
Yeah, you would drink the coffee, then all of a sudden your bladder thing would be all the way full. And it's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. By the time you get out of the bathroom, all the coffee awakeness is done, and you just fall asleep in the bathroom.
Or you run back to the kitchen, get more coffee, and you're in this stupid cycle of, I'm either going pee or pass out.
Yeah, and there was a guy, I remember, he was just watching my big screen TV, and everybody left, and I'm just like... I'm peeing on the floor, and you're not even leaving. I'm going to go to my room and go to sleep. I went to sleep, and it would fast forward through time. That guy stayed until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, well,
then he left.
You know why?
You had a nice TV.
Exactly, you had a better TV.
Yeah, so. No. There was no way, I don't think there was a way to have conversation where it's like, get the fuck out of my house.
No, there wasn't.
Oh, actually, there kind of was. So, the goth family, default NPC family in the game is the goth.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah,
saying how Mr. Goth pissed me off. I just hated that smug son of a bitch. So if he came over...
Well, they had a mansion, so they were douches.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a pretty nice
And his
house.
Wife was a slut. She slept with everyone.
Yeah, she got around.
Yeah, yeah.
For Mr. Goth, I found a perfect way to tell him to leave my house. I picked fights with him.
Oh.
I kept insulting him until he'd get pissed off, try leaving. As soon as he starts leaving, I go right back up to him, insult him some more, until eventually either a fight breaks out or one time he left the neighborhood entirely.
Jeez.
Of course, this was right after I pretty much he came over just in time to see my character sleeping with his wife.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's a basic part of the game. Well, you had to work. If you could miss one day of work, and then the next day you have to go to work.
Or you get fired.
Yeah, if you miss 2 days in a row, you would get fired. So, you know, you'd get into this day off, day on kind of thing just to, you know, get money, but also keep your character sane. I remember I had a woman character, and she was a military character, and I thought I set up her personality pretty good. And so she would go to work and she would come back, and I think I needed more money, so I kept making her go to work as to the absolute stress level and then make her have a day off and stuff like that. But I never really had time to have friends because I think the military schedule was like different than the, because there
yes.
was different times.
It was really early
yeah.
in the morning,
yeah.
if I remember correctly.
So when she would get home, like nobody else was home in the neighborhood. And I remember one time, and it totally affected me, like I felt so bad. She came home from work and she just walked in the middle of the living room and just started crying. She just cried for a good like hour. And I didn't know what to... I felt so bad. I didn't... I stopped playing that character. I felt so bad.
You
I was like,
her birth,
yeah,
birth
I was like,
away.
I don't want to... What kind of, I don't want to play this game. What kind of video game is it?
It was pretty... Yeah, when they would break down, you'd be like, why are you so sad? Like, you've got everything you want. You got a roof over your head. You got a house.
You got a big screen TV.
You got a big screen TV. And a
virtual reality.
You got the nice bed. I spent all that money on the nice bed for you. And
yeah.
The super wanky toilet.
Yeah, the super awesome toilet.
Yeah.
That would clear all your bladder. I don't know how that works. It doesn't matter what the toilet is. It doesn't...
Yeah. It's just, you felt more comfortable taking a deuce in there.
I guess so. And then, you know...
Actually, that wasn't a bladder simulator. It's a crying game.
Yeah, it's a crying
all
game.
You did
there
was
a lot of cry and pee. And, you know, your characters could also die, which was the, you know, heartbreaking and funny thing.
And where we became evil people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, your stove could sometimes light on fire, or
yeah.
if you were changing light bulbs, sometimes you light the house on fire
and
die.
Well, and that's the thing why putting your appliances together wasn't always the best thing.
Yeah,
like
that's
having
true.
A small kitchen, because if you had all your appliances together and one thing catches on fire, you lose all those appliances.
I remember... this one
and
time
you,
I had a... Oh,
and,
yeah, go ahead.
And you remember you had to buy a fire extinguisher, too. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you couldn't put out the fire.
Yeah.
Oh, and you never wanted to build a long, skinny kitchen.
No.
With only one entrance. Because then a fire breaks out at the entrance. You're trapped inside.
Yeah.
You just slowly watch your guy burn.
Yeah. And the burglar alarm was, like, the number one accessory. Because the people would come
mean,
and jack your shit
yeah,
up.
Yeah, they would steal from
but
you all the time.
You don't put it inside your house. You put it outside your house. And somehow it magically knew, all right, that's Mr. Goth. You know, I won't go off. Oh, criminal. I'm going to go off
yeah.
now.
Yep.
Wasn't there, like, a thing where you could hire gardeners or somebody to clean up your house or
yes,
something?
Yes,
you could have
to pay a gardener.
Yeah, that was, like, essential. Like, you needed a job just so that you... Because you would just have crap all over the place.
Yeah.
Or you'd need, like, four people in your family.
Yeah, you'd have pee and garbage just stocked up all over the place. But, okay, with the fire thing, one of my funniest moments was that I was having a outside barbecue with my swimming pool. I invited the whole neighborhood over except for those... freaking goths.
Yeah.
And so everybody's partying, have a good time, everybody's talking and stuff like that. Barbecue caught on fire, right? So I had a fire extinguisher, so my guy goes into the house, grabs the fire extinguisher. I think this is how it works. Anyway, so there was a fire. The goths were walking around the neighborhood, and they happened to be passing by, right? And they were far away from the sidewalk. They ran all the way to the backyard and started screaming at the fire. Like, they ran up to 5 feet of it. Everybody in the party is just screaming at the fire, and they're screaming at the fire. Mrs. Goth catches on fire. Right? And she dies right there in my backyard.
Oh, and we know what happens when you die.
Well, there's a tombstone in my backyard. And so, you know, get it all fixed, you know, stop the fire, everybody's cool, nobody else died, and then everybody went home. There's a freaking tombstone in my backyard I can't get rid of.
Yeah.
And my character would just cry in front of the tombstone, and I'm like, you weren't even invited to the party.
And then the weirdest thing, first time you see it, middle of the night, all of a sudden, a ghost appears.
Yeah.
And it's like, what did this game just do?
Mrs. Goth's ghost would... Mrs. Goth's ghost? Mrs. Goth's ghost...
She sells seashells by the seashore.
That chick's ghost would, like, haunt my house. They weren't even invited to the party.
That's why they should have kept their nose out of it.
They literally ran away from safety to danger to scream at a fire. Yeah. Who does that?
Well, the best part is that they... And it's like she dies, and it's like, where she has fallen, there she shall be buried.
Yeah, that's gross. That's terrible.
Huh?
That's like cops. Yeah, somebody just buried a corpse on my wall.
You know what happened is that she died in the fire, and nobody wanted to call the cops.
Yeah.
And so Mr. God and you had a secret pact to bury her in the yard and never speak of it again.
Or I threatened Mr. God. I was like, hey, this ain't going on my record. You're not suing me. I'm burying her in the backyard. I'll bury you too and that scrub and that naughty little kid.
You want to join her? You keep talking, old man.
I have priors for arson and murder. They're going to pin this on me.
And of course, you know, once all that... You know, we've figured out how to, like, kill the characters. And
first, one thing that we later figured out, but for a long time, some people make mistake. I'm going to build my nice swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to have a diving board. And no ramp or stairs or ladder.
Ladder.
No ladder, get out. And it's like, real pool. You go to the edge. You pull yourself out.
Yeah.
No. The Sims, they jump in the pool. And they can never get out.
That became the easiest way to kill a Sim character. You would build a pool, you'd build a diving board, they'd jump in the pool, and they would never get out.
Yep.
They would just drown.
And then you'd have urns around your pool.
Yeah.
Instead of gravestones. Yeah. I mean, that'd just be bad. Gravestone in the pool.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that, I mean, basically, that started our...
Murder simulator.
Vicious human experimentation project. Which one of our friends, Eric, actually named our Holocaust Simulator.
Yeah, that was the epitome of bad.
This is bad and un-PC, but we were in college, it's okay.
Tune out, just fast forward a little if you need to.
If you don't like really horrible talk about ways to kill people, then...
Look, okay, disclaimer, the Holocaust was bad, alright? We're not Holocaust deniers, we're not making fun of the Holocaust. It was just something somebody said. We're just going to refer to it as Murder Simulator from now on.
Yeah, that's fine.
That was bad. I want to edit that. But we're not, because this is raw and uncut. Anyway.
You did not just say raw and uncut.
Uncut.
Okay.
Okay.
Raw.
Oh, damn it.
Ugh. Okay.
Anyway. So this started the trend of our of all of us. Like, coming up with devious, like, experiments to try to test the limits of the game's boundaries.
Yep.
And one of my experiment was I wanted to know, you know, which appliances would help, would elongate a person's life, which ones they could live with or live without the most.
Sure.
Yeah. So I had an experiment. I made one room, I made a door, had the sim walk in there, closed and destroyed the door. Another room, same thing. One room had a bed, right? Only a bed. So the Sim could just keep on sleeping and sleep and be rested as much as possible. The other room had a table. And on the table, it had a virtual reality goggles, which is entertainment factor or whatever. So the experiment was, how long would you survive if you could rest all day or if you could be entertained all day? So over the course of a week, no food.
However, they still peed plenty.
Yeah, well,
they have windows?
They peed all over the... I want to say they did, okay, but I don't know. I don't remember.
Windowless rooms.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, so yeah, this went on, like, fast-forwarded the thing.
Oh, was this a nice bed or was this a crappy bed?
The best bed.
Okay.
The best bed.
Okay.
Just like how a virtual reality was the best entertainment.
Yeah, the virtual reality thing was the best entertainment. So, so yeah, fast forward time, a lot of crying, a lot of peeing, a lot of mad Sims, but you know, a lot of sleeping, a lot of virtual reality goggles, and eventually the person with the bed just keeled over and died. Right? I'm starting to realize in the middle of this podcast that this is terrible. Like everything that we're about to say about the Sims.
Keep going.
No, I like that this is at the front of the podcast. Sure. Anyway, so the person with the bed keels over first. So I'm like, all right, cool. The virtuality entertainment wins. You would last longer if you were a Sim, if you had more entertainment than sleeping.
Well, yeah, because you can sleep on the floor.
Yeah, you could sleep
all
on the
floor. All sleep and no play makes Sim a dead boy.
Yeah. So I had the lady who won, in quotation marks.
Yes, won.
So I built her a door so she could get out. There was a phone in the hallway. She picked up the phone. I made her order a pizza so she could have some food.
Her victory meal.
So she stayed around crying and peeing and stuff. And then once the pizza delivery guy came up and he got to the door, she was walking to the door. She fell over. She just died from hunger. Literally 10 feet from food.
So she died. Walking to what would save her.
To her ultimate prize.
That's tragedy.
Yeah.
That's tragedy.
And what happened to the pizza guy? Did you just keep ringing the door? How long did you ring the doorbell?
I don't remember. I think he just went away after.
Just left. Like, just pizza.
Yeah. Pizza. There's a smell.
Didn't hear a body fall over. Didn't hear a lady, like, no. Didn't hear the death rattle before he left.
No. So that was, I think that was my most vicious experiment other than, like, building a pool with no way out. Kind of thing. And that was more, yeah, you know, we're just testing the boundaries of games. I mean, that's kind of what you do as a gamer, as sick as it sounds.
I love to test the boundaries. Without going full on, like, I'm just killing them, how unsafe of a house could I make? So I made a kitchen that was 1 square wide, about 20 squares long. Everything that could be flammable was at the entrance. And at the far back was the sink and the fridge. So it's a death trap
kitchen.
It was
the gauntlet, okay.
And then I had a bunch of other rooms. Everything was set up with appliances that break, so you'd try and repair them. There were lights everywhere, so lights would go out and you'd have to change them. Like, it's pretty much the house of just temptation. Here is everything that could go wrong. How long will it take? There's barbecues, about 5 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
The Sims were terrible at grilling.
Well, I forgot to mention, when you would have a kid, because you'd get married, and then person would move in, and then you can have
a kid. Are you going to tell about Eric's?
Yes. Well, this is a setup. You can have a kid, and if your characters don't take care of the kid well enough, like after a few days, child services would come and take the baby away. I remember there was one time... I forgot what my guy's job was, but he had a good job, and his wife would stay home and paint pictures because it would add to revenue. Right?
Yeah, I remember you
especially when you get really good at painting pictures.
Yep.
So she would paint pictures, stay at home with the kid and stuff like that, and then she got so obsessed with the painting, she would stop taking care of the kid, and the kid would just cry in the other room, and she'd paint out in the patio and paint, and I'd be like, take care of the kid! And she wouldn't listen to me, because sometimes they don't listen to you very well.
No, they would do their own thing.
Literally, like, after, like, my guy would come home and just, like, try to take care of this kid, and my wife would just keep painting. It was just a unhappy marriage. Eventually, child services came while I was at work, right? She's painting, like, in full view of the kid. Like, she's painting outside on the patio. There's, like, a...
They walk right in,
they take the baby, and they leave. And I come home, and she's just painting, like, nothing happened. There's a crazy-ass story there. That's like a Lifetime TV movie of the week.
Your wife was autistic. She did not care about the child.
I think she just hated me. I think that wasn't my kid.
That was Mr. Goth's kid.
Yeah,
that
was Mr. Goth's kid. And, okay, so, the most infamous of our friends, aforementioned friend Eric, he once made this... When he had a... He had a couple. Have a child.
Yes.
Right? And so he took the child, the crib and all, and placed it outside. He built, like, a hill, and he built, like, a two or three space, like,
square room. Yep.
Square room. And just put the kid in there. No windows, no doors, right? So his Sims would, like, be in the house, being all sad because they don't know where their kid is, and they can hear it crying up on the hill, but they can't get to the kid, right?
That's a horror movie.
And then he also wanted to test, like, well, can child services come into and find out and get the kid, right? So, you know, a couple days pass and everything, the kid's crying, it's just being neglected, just terrible, terrible things. And eventually, sure enough, in the middle of the night, child services just appeared inside of that room, just like appeared like a freaking magician, like Harry Potter. They just apparated, like right into the room, took the kid and just disappeared, like right with the kid, without the kid. And then the Sims started being happy again because there's no kid crying. That was terrible. That is a terrible, terrible game.
That was a pretty horrible,
but pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah,
that was one of those games where you would sit down to start playing and then you would blink, and you would look at the clock again, and you're like, it's six hours just passed.
Yeah, because it was always like, I wanna add a new room, I gotta get this
new... I need
a
promotion, I just need three more friends. That's what was so dumb. If you wanted a promotion, you had to have X number of friends per promotion level.
Yeah, I always like going the actor track, because you would practice by being in front of the mirror, and you'd talk, and then you'd practice as acting or something like that. I mean, it was, like, there was a lot of, like, you could see the edges of that game very easily once you would test it out, as all of our crazy stories would attest. But, I mean, it was pretty interesting just because of, like, the things that it was trying to do and trying to simulate. And from what I hear in number 2 and 3, like, it gets much more deeper than number 1 was. But number 1 had that charm because there was nothing else like
it. Well, 1 also had, like, a whole bunch of expansions that were part of it, too, that expanded it even more. So you had, like, them going other places as opposed to their neighborhood.
Yeah. One thing that I
picked up, like, Hot Date was one of them.
Yeah, they would have, like, the
you could go to the nightclub and all of that.
I mean, yeah, and then this is like, you know, they started putting the Sims in actual other Sim games. Like, I think SimCity 4, you could import your Sims to live in your city or something. And, like, I think in the new SimCity that they're coming out, like, they have the same kind of personality records or something for each guy that lives in your city or something.
Oh,
yeah, one of the well, like, you wouldn't control them, but you would just know what...
kind of interesting.
Yeah, you would just know what they would like, so you'd know what to build in your thing. Anyway... But yeah, I mean, it was a game that was really popular and for in our group and really obsessive. But it was funny because it only lasted like about a month for everybody.
It's a supernova.
Yeah, it was a really short period of time that everybody was really obsessed with.
When we got it and we distributed amongst everybody, like we played that to no end. I remember even just leaving on my computer just to simulate them like over time, just to see if they would actually. Like,
if they could live without you intervening.
That was a little bit of a disappointment that, you know, I would come back and, like, the house would just be burnt down.
Yeah,
or, like, they would just be dead or just,
unemployed.
Yeah, dead and unemployed and just, they wouldn't know actually.
There was some, there's some AI portion to them, but there wasn't enough that you could just leave it by itself.
Although that's one of the features in the game was they talked about, if you run in the background, let the Sims live out their life and you could check on them later.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
And it's like, their lives suck.
Yeah, they would just be crying in a puddle of their own whatever.
Pee.
In their own pee.
Urine. It's urine. It's
this
yellow.
Is the
it's
most,
pee.
This is the most times we've ever said pee on the podcast. And urine.
It's only number 7, man. We got a long way to go.
But yeah, that was a supernova. We played that to death for a whole month, and then it's just, I'm done. I've never played Sims after that month.
No, I haven't
either.
Oh,
I played it a little when Hot Date came out. It's like, okay, this will bring life back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent, like $35-$40 on Hot Date and played it maybe for 2 hours.
Yeah, those expansions were really expensive. They were full price almost, as the same as the game. And yet, there wasn't. It was an expansion. It wasn't a full game.
Yeah, there wasn't enough of a hook to if you were bored with the game, they weren't going to bring you back in.
But that was definitely, that was like EA at its EA-ness, like, oh, hey, look, we got something really popular.
I've always had, like, a thought of going back and playing, like, the latest version, you know, at several points, and just trying to see what's new and stuff. But, I don't know, I've just never had a desire to go back.
No, I think we've, you know, it had its place in time, and we're both...
And we had enough funny stories to last a lifetime about The Sims.
Some games, you know, they're good for a while, but they overstay their welcome. We grow up and move on, like how we're talking about Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a drink of water. You guys keep going.
What? Okay. Well, so at the same time that we were playing The Sims, I think I finally got myself a decent enough gaming computer that I could start playing some of the more modern games. And one of the first ones I got, this is also when I was working, like right after I started working in EB, I want to say I did not get this copy legitimately, but I did get this game, and that was System Shock 2.
That game's a classic.
That game's amazing. I remember playing that game for the first time, and this is finally at the point where I felt comfortable enough starting to play first-person shooters with a mouse and keyboard, so I could get the controls down and feel like I knew what I was doing.
What are we talking about?
Or under System Shock 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that game is fantastic. I was telling them, you know, I was mentioning the fact that I had finally gotten a gaming computer that was good enough to play this stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the more modern stuff. And that was one of the first games I remember playing extensively.
Yeah. That's a terrifying game.
Yeah, that was
made by the guys who eventually started and made BioShock.
And Thief.
And Thief.
Looking Glass is, I believe, the name of this
game. Yeah, and, I mean, I never actually played System Shock 1, so I don't know if that was...
Me neither.
What that was about, but, I mean, System Shock 2 was cool, because that was when they started experimenting with first-person shooters. I mean, I think this is around the same time that Deus Ex comes out.
Yeah, I want to say it's right around the same
time. Yeah, so you start having other mechanics than just, you know, the Doom, I have a shotgun and I'm shooting stuff. I mean, they had, like, three tracks you could go through in System Shock 2.
Yeah, there were three different tracks that you could go through to start out with the game.
What were they?
The hacker.
There was a hacker.
There was the psyops, and then there was just the soldier.
Yeah.
So, I usually picked the hacker because that was the kind of character I wanted to play, yeah.
And they seemed to be, like, a little bit of an easier track just because you could get around a lot of doors
security systems
and turrets and those kind of things.
No, but
turn off the alarms.
Yeah, but definitely the thing I remember most about that game the first time I was playing it was after you get through the whole training sequence and then you get onto the main ship where the game is...
Mm-hmm.
And then you start walking around the derelict ship. There's nobody else around, but you've got the voice talking to you. I forget what the computer's name was.
Shodan.
Okay. Shodan. Was that the girl? The female computer?
Yeah, the female computer.
Okay.
Was there a different computer in 2 also?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I remember there was the twist in that game was that the computer was actually somebody else.
Yeah, I forget.
It's been a while since I played it. But no, the walking around the ship, like the first level of the ship, and then hearing like a random moan, mm-hmm. and this is when I had finally had like, you know, stereo speakers, they could start making out some of the stuff. I had my Sound Blaster card, mm-hmm. And then you hear a moan, and you're like, what was that? And then you, okay, nothing else. Walk around a corner, and then there's an undead, like, dude just like, oh, kill me!
Yeah,
and he's like, what?
Yeah, they'd start going, kill me! I'm sorry!
And, like, I literally lost it. I moved my mouse, like, all the other side, and I'm like, Jesus Christ! Give me a second to get back on the mouse and keyboard and then beat the guy to death, or shoot him, depending on what I had at the time.
That was the thing with that game, everything would break.
Yep.
All of your stuff would break. Your gun would break.
Yeah, that's why repair was a skill that you had to learn in that, too.
The thing that would always freak me out was those freaking monkeys.
Oh, yeah, the monkeys.
Oh.
The monkeys were scary.
Psychic monkeys.
Psychic monkeys that would go...
and then shoot the side blast at you. And you're like, what the...
What the F is going on?
That doesn't work.
That's
stupid fucking monkey.
Yeah.
I think it's a rule, though, in games. Monkeys are scary.
Well, and then the funny thing is that sometimes the monkeys
were scary in Super Monkey Ball? Yeah, actually, they're terrifying.
No, but then you would get the monkeys to fight the zombies, too, at some points.
Yeah, they would.
Get them to fight each other.
I want to say that was a Half-Life 1 engine that was running on System Shock.
Looks like it might have been. Yeah,
I want to say that it was
about
Half-Life.
The way it looks, that doesn't sound too far
the
off.
The game looked gorgeous when it first came out.
Oh, yeah, it's a great. It was
They did well with the spaceship sci-fi thing because they just had very clean, like, textures all over the place, so it just looked really smooth.
And it was really dark, so they didn't have to have a whole lot of light going
on. The atmosphere was
had, like, a huge inventory system and stuff like that, and those just chips or something.
You had to eat chips and soda, and then there was chemicals that you could mix to create compounds of some kind.
Yeah, that was the thing with Bioshock. As much as I loved that game, it was definitely a kind of a step back.
That's kind of why I never got into Bioshock, is because it wasn't
I think I finally went, okay, this is not System Shock 2, this is a different game.
Yeah.
See, I mean, in Bioshock 1, I never played 2, but the story was pretty awesome. And the combat was really good,
because
it was simplified, but it was just, it didn't have the complexity.
Well, that's the thing.
I was okay with
that. I went into that expecting one thing, and I got another, so that's why I never...
I didn't want a spiritual successor, I wanted a sequel.
Man, if they made a System Shock 3...
And well, they've made a... I
don't think they're ever going to make...
They made a Fallout 3, which means that...
Yeah, but they're making those Bioshock...
Yeah.
I mean, Bioshock Infinite is looks pretty cool.
Well, whoever owns that IP, I don't know if they actually own it. I don't know if 2K...
They don't own it
anymore? I don't know if Take-Two... Or, whoever makes that...
Yeah, I don't know.
...owns that IP. So, if somebody were to take a game like that... Like I said, that's the last game I remember that, aside from the Fallout games recently, that is like that I can think of. And there's nothing sci-fi that I can think of recently.
That's what?
Like an RPG /
First-person shooter.
Yeah,
I guess you could kind of maybe put Stalker in that.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
yeah.
Metro 2033.
I haven't played that.
Yeah,
I want to say that has an inventory system, and that's kind of sci-fi, but Stalker in that one is mostly post-apocalyptic. In very Russian, Eastern European games where it's just kind of rough.
Yeah. But no, I do have really fond memories of that game.
Yeah, System Shock 2 was... System Shock 2 is a good game.
It was a fantastic game.
I think you can find that free really easily online, too.
I think I still have a copy on my computer.
Yeah. I think I used to download that from that Underdogs website. Remember Underdogs?
I vaguely remember that,
yeah. Yeah, Underdogs was a pretty good, like... video game archives that I haven't been to that in years. I don't even know if they're still around. Mm-hmm. But, PC games. But, yeah, okay, so with the PC gaming in college, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but I want to kind of expand a little bit more. And, we had a lot of emulators at that time. And I got to be able to play, like, games that I never got to play before. Harvest Moon was one of them. And another one that I got really into that I never had on the Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo was Harvest Moon.
Okay.
Harvest Moon was such a good game.
And it shouldn't have been.
Yeah,
it had no right being as good as it was. I mean, it's a farming simulator RPG.
Yeah, Harvest Moon is basically a Japanese game, so it's very Japanese in its quirkiness.
Yes.
And... it's basically a farming simulator. You would have a farm, and you would till the land, you would seed the land, you would water crops, you would pick your crops, you would milk your cow, you would sell your stuff. But they had all of this, like, other adventure stuff as well. Like, you would have these
caves
to explore, you'd have, like, festivals and stuff like that. Did you play that when it came out? Or was that emulator also? Yeah. I never even knew what Harvest Simulator was, and I think you told me about it, Kevin.
Yeah, because I started playing it, I think I played it, like, a month before coming up to college. And Dan, being my roommate, you know, I'm showing him emulators and stuff, and it's like, okay, Dan, here's a game. Yeah. Just bear with me. It's a farming role-playing game dating simulator.
Yeah.
Just bear with me.
Yeah, there was a dating element to it. And it's funny because I loved that Super Nintendo version so much, maybe because it was the first one, but I've tried to play the other ones, and it didn't grab me as much as that one did.
Yeah.
That one grabbed me, like...
Well, it's the best one.
Well, I think the way that works is that the concept was so unique at the time when you played it that it was you're like, okay, yeah, I'm enamored, I'm going to play this all the way out. But then when you go back, if you play it again, a later game of the series, and it's exactly the same?
No, actually,
that's the thing.
That's where it's exactly different?
The
okay.
same.
Like, the first game, you had, seven different girls you could pick to date. Each one's different, wants different things, different outings.
Okay. Wait. This goes back to my point. To make a good RPG, you have to make it so that it seems like you have a girlfriend in the game.
Yeah, that's how I win.
Yeah, that's how I win. Okay. Anyway, let's go.
So there's seven, all unique in the first one. I think last one I played was PS2.
Okay.
And it had
three.
Yeah,
that one was not good.
It had three.
Yeah.
Three girls picked from, and they were all almost identical.
Well, I'm mostly talking about the fact of the gameplay itself.
And then that's
yeah,
the other thing.
How different was
the farming?
The games?
The farming was rough on the first one. You had to plow the fields, you had to sow the seeds, you had to water, you had to do a lot of work, keep them going, a lot of strategy of where away your crops down so you could water and harvest everything. The later ones, they put on easy mode. Like, you could walk through your crops.
It became like a kind of almost like a puzzle part of it, where you would have to build your crops in a certain way so that you could get the maximum amount of waterage and make it efficient, because your guy would get tired eventually and have to go to sleep.
Okay.
So that was like a big element to the first game. You'd really have to plan out your farm to make sure that you'd get the maximum like efficiency without like wasting crops and stuff like that. A good game, and
they
I suggest.
Later
and
on.
You know, as much as we're harping on the newer ones, I would recommend anybody who likes Japanese type RPGs and a little bit of quirkiness, and wants to see if a farming simulator would still hold up as a game. I would suggest any of the Harvest Moons, in spite of our reservations with the modern ones. But that's a good game and a good series and
really different.
And nobody else makes that kind of game.
No.
What is it? Natsumi?
Natsumi. Yeah, Natsumi.
Yeah. The other game, I know what you think thinking
yep.
of,
oh, yeah.
but it was on Super Nintendo and I only played it on emulator, was Aerobiz.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Airline Simulator?
Airline Corporation Simulator or Management Simulator. You weren't flying
nope.
the planes. There was no flying of the plane.
No, it was managing your routes and it was a numbers game.
Aerobiz was made by a company I don't remember, but it's also a Japanese game, but it was basically a simulator for an airline company. You would make a company, you would choose your starting location hub,
yep.
and then you would buy planes from Boeing or
McDonnell Douglas.
Yeah, or random
Airbus.
Yeah, or Airbus or random Central Asian company.
Oh,
I forget. Yeah, those.
Sure.
Yeah, there was some. Those were really cheap but really dangerous planes.
Uh-huh.
And then so, you know, the different planes would have different amounts of passengers in it, different fuel capacities, and so it was all about managing, like,
Koei.
Koei, okay.
Of course.
Yeah, of course they would make that. But yeah, so it was all about managing, like, efficiency and trying to figure out, like, the best way, like, you know, do I put this plane on this leg of this journey and stuff like that. And what was crazy was that you would have to negotiate for spots in other airports.
Yep.
So if you wanted to open a flight to Tokyo, you couldn't just go like, I'm just going to fly to Tokyo. You had to negotiate with the Tokyo, I think, Narita Airport. I think they had real airports.
Yeah, they did. No, they had real airports.
And you would send business people over there to negotiate to make sure that you would have a spot.
Yep.
And then you would have that spot.
The terminal.
And then you would change, like, you would change fares. You would change how many times a week that you would fly the plane. And it was just crazy. There was even business opportunities where you could buy hotels or partnerships with the hotels. You could manage an advertising thing. The advertising was a little bit simplified, but yeah, and you would have board meetings and stuff like that. It was crazy.
You were obsessed with that game.
I was obsessed with that game.
You played that for weeks. Like, it wasn't even, you're like, all right, I got my hub in Atlanta, but I need to expand to Africa.
Yeah. Oh, and then, of course, the crazy thing is just like, you know, the dates would be simulated and everything, and you could start in different eras, and I always like starting in like the 60s-ish.
Oh,
so
the Pan Am era?
Yeah, the Pan Am start of the jet airline
yep.
era. And so they would actually have historical events in the game, so that, you know, when Olympics would roll around, actual Olympics, like...
You had to run to the Olympics.
You want to make sure that you'd have... So there'd be like, oh, the Olympics in Rome in, I think, 1960 was announced.
Better get a terminal
Okay, so in the next couple years, we're going to focus on making a terminal there and making sure we got a flight going to Rome so we could get that 2 weeks of huge revenue. The funny one was... And then they would be like, oh, tourism is booming in, like, you know, Bermuda or something. So you would spend all this money to try to get to Bermuda, and by the time you would have it open, tourism would go down, and you have this flight that, like, two people take to Bermuda.
Woo, I'm going, like, down to Bermuda.
Yeah, yeah. And then there would be also bad events. Like, I think there was the simulation of the 76, like, terrorism thing in Munich.
Ugh.
And then every so often there would be, like, terrorism, like, on your planes. Sometimes your planes would go down.
Yeah, that was...
That was, like the worst thing, because revenue would just be down for years.
Yep.
And you would just have to repair your company's reputation. That's awesome.
Was it the Central Asian planes that usually went down?
Or yeah, did you ever have
the good planes go down?
I don't remember having the good planes going down, but I remember, yeah. And yeah, I just remember, like, the flights with the most profit were always, like, those long, like, New York to Paris, New York to Tokyo flights. Just rad. It's such a rad game.
Just maximizing your, like, numbers crunching.
Yeah, and then you would, like, tweak, like, fares, and you're like, I don't understand why you're losing money on this thing. The plane's full every time!
See, I think that's the lesson of Super Nintendo era. You could have all of these games that, quite frankly, if we just described in, like, two lines what Harvest Moon or what Aerobiz is, no one would play these.
Yeah.
No.
And yes, it's a marketing simulator for airplanes.
And then, like, a game that I played, it wasn't on emulator, but a game that I played that I completely missed when it came out, but I played in college, was XCOM. XCOM came in 1994.
Yeah.
There's an updated sequel now, but XCOM was pretty rough. It was made by Microprose, which I believe was the first company that... What Firaxis used to be called.
Yeah.
They made the Civilization games.
Civ 1 was Microprose.
That's a game, a tactical turn-based squad game, murder simulator, just panic simulator game.
You're a crack squad of soldiers sent to stop an alien invasion.
And they were so hard. I mean, everybody, there's always stories of, like, my first XCOM game. My first XCOM mission is always, I'm coming down the ramp of my Sky Ranger, the plane that would deploy you there, and three of your rookies would just get killed. And the other guys would start panicking, and you don't even know where the aliens are. And everything was just a fog of war and just terrible. I mean, the new game captures it very well, and I think as close as you could probably get to that same feeling. But that old game was so hard and so frustrating and so nasty.
No tutorial. No tool tips on that game.
No, you just play and die.
You had, like, 20 buttons on the screen, and you didn't even understand what any of them meant. There were not even, like, there were little pictures. You couldn't figure it out. Like, if you ever look at a screenshot of the original XCOM UFO defense, you would not know what any of this was.
Uh-uh.
And so that would
take... There's, like, arrows in one section that's got, like, arrows for your facing, right? And then, like, the movement, and then there's the, like, a turn 180 button.
There's one with just a face.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know what that means.
Yep.
I still think I don't know what half of those buttons
mean. No, I think you just kind of clutched your way through it.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as I like that game, it's also extremely frustrating. And one thing that game had that the new XCOM does not have, which I kind of hope that if they ever make a sequel to the newest version that they would put this in, was base attack or base invasion.
Oh, yeah.
After a while, the aliens would figure out where your base was, because they would know that all of these aircraft are being all of their UFOs are being attacked from a particular
specific
location.
Point, yeah.
And they would actually invade your base, and I think you could eventually build, like, something that would give you some kind of warning.
Okay.
But it would come, and it would come fierce, and there would be enemies there that you would never see before.
Lovely.
And they would attack your base.
Send in their best troops.
Yeah. And this was, it would be like an ambush, because your characters would, your guys in your base, and they love to do it when, like, your best guys are out on a mission.
Oh.
And they would be coming back on the Sky Ranger. They would attack your base right then. And, like, So you would have your second
your C squad.
Your C squad.
Not even B, just C squad.
And they would be scattered all over your base. Because they were not ready. So
sure.
Some guy's just like in this random room with no weapons and he's just running around.
And then he dies.
And there's cyber disc all over the place and mutons and shit. It was fucking terrible.
Did you get your way through that alien?
Sometimes a lot of saving and loading and
praying,
yeah.
And crossing your fingers.
Yeah, some missions would take
swearing.
Like hours because you would just save and reload. You're like, that's just bullshit. That is bullshit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'd take hours just because you're going so slow. It's like, I can't afford to move more than 2 squares at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, oh yeah, and then that was the thing. Like, you know, you never knew what the movement speed was, or how many times you could do actions in a turn, was determined by each guy's time unit thing. And certain people would have more time units, less time units. And I never figured out how many time units cost to, like, move one space and stuff. So you'd always be, like, super extra cautious.
Yeah.
And stuff. Like, that's what I think the new game does very well. It just simplifies and makes it easier to just understand and be quick.
Well, I actually beat that game, so
yeah
that's
well,
how
you
I
can think. Have you can have quick missions in that game.
Yep.
You know, sometimes they can still take 40 minutes, but the old ones would take forever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a charm.
Well,
that's
the thing about those old strategy RPGs is that they took a long time because
yeah.
You had to plan out every move so meticulously. It's like you have to know, okay, I can go this far and then I can shoot this guy or I can stab this guy depending on your genre of strategy RPG. And then you would know, okay, if I'm facing this guy from the front, I'll have a better chance to hit him.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm around cover, he won't have as good a chance to hit me. It was just all that extra stuff that you actually had to figure out before you moved, and it wasn't explained to you in any way. Whereas now the games are kind of like more explain that more. So it's like
yeah.
When you're playing, you know, Fallout or something like along those lines, you know your percentage like right up front. It's like, okay, you're going to have this percentage chance to hit this guy. Do you want to take that shot now, or do you want to get closer and take a better shot?
And then a couple other differences with the newest XCOM thing that I miss in the old game. The old game was, if your guy died, you could actually go to his body with another guy and pick up his stuff. In the new one, you can't. Like, if you're heavy with your best, you know, plasma heavy cannon or whatever, falls down, that cannon is just lost. But in the old one, your guy could
you,
run up...
You go back to base? I thought you got...
Well,
the,
no, you can.
Okay,
I'm talking
okay.
about in the mission.
In the mission, though.
In
yeah,
the mission,
you,
your guy could run up, take that rocket launcher, load it, and shoot a cyber disk.
Yeah.
And because, yeah, there was no classes in that game. You didn't have a defined class.
No.
Or, of course, if you just got ambushed, you used med packs.
Yeah.
Pick up the med pack from the dead dude.
You could actually even pick up the body and put him in your backpack. I don't understand what that did. It was just like a weird pixel character. And really quickly, another thing that was funny in that game was that you could have, in the new game, you could have a total of 6 guys maximum. In that old game, I think the max was maybe 18 or maybe 20.
No, I remember it was big. You
and
have
you would just have a whole slew of guys. In a way, that's probably better because it would just take forever to go through a turn.
Yeah.
And you don't even remember, like,
who's this guy? Yeah, they all look very similar. So it's like, is that my sniper or is that my assault guy?
Yeah.
Like... Nope, okay, that's my heavy guy.
Yeah.
And I just moved him all the way back.
Yeah. I don't know, is there any other games that, like, you discovered in college that you missed first time around that you remember, like, specifically?
Like, no, I mean, pretty much the emulation period was the stuff where we could start dipping into old consoles and things like that we never had, like, you would... I would go in.
You never had the money for
exactly.
It,
so I was able to actually download a Genesis emulator and go, okay, I'm going to try these games out.
These
classics that are Toe Jam and Earl or
mm-hmm.
you know your Sonic the Hedgehogs that I never played.
Yeah, you're like filling in the gaps.
Exactly. You're going back and you're like, okay, here's this game for the NES that I really wanted to play, but I didn't have the money to play. So
what I liked was this was point where. People were finally getting a little more obsessive about the old school games, so you'd start finding like the ROM patches to translate like Final Fantasy V into English.
Yeah,
I mean Final Fantasy V, wonderful game. You know, we were spoken in the U.S. until I guess resources at Square said, "Well, we'll just move on number 6, call it 3, and
okay.
we'll be good." 5 had the most in-depth job system, just unbelievable game, and we never got to see it, then all of a sudden, here comes the English patch. English, as in, they translated what mattered.
Yeah.
Which is mainly the menus, and anyone who assigns a quest to you. Everything else is in squiggly, like, weird random letters, because they changed the character set, so yeah. You don't have Japanese...
But they didn't actually translate it to an actual word.
Yeah, so, like, people just say the equivalent of smashing your head on a keyboard. And then, slowly, more patches come, and eventually you have a full-on English patch. Sounds, you know, the words are better English than what Final Fantasy II in the U.S. had.
Yeah.
See, I remember, I don't remember there being as many errors in that as most people say. But maybe that's just
Final Fantasy II.
Yeah, maybe there's just the
rose-colored
glasses.
I think if we go through it now, we'll probably...
I still have it. We can do that.
I think if, because our, I mean, you know, like, your understanding of grammar and stuff is much better than when you were...
Yeah, well,
how old were you?
12,
like
probably.
12?
Yeah, we were in junior high school.
Yeah, and then probably, you know, we glossed over a lot of stuff that didn't make sense, and there's probably a lot that doesn't make sense.
Well, I've gone back and played that game since then.
Yeah.
Maybe take a more critical eye at it. That'd be interesting. But emulation was definitely the period where we could start doing stuff like that. And also, remember that at that point, because they were starting to emulate that, the older consoles... Emulation moved forward pretty quickly, and then we got to the point where it was possible to start emulating PlayStation games on your computer.
Yeah.
There was the what was the name of that program that you could download? There was a specific
Bleem.
Bleem, there we go. Yep.
Yeah.
Bleem. Was Bleem?
Bleem
yeah.
was the PlayStation emulator. Well, they made Bleemcast
as
well.
Oh yeah, they made Bleemcast.
Yeah, yeah, so there was Bleem that came out for your PC.
The lawsuits began.
Yeah, but the cool thing about Bleem was it was a PC program that you would run. But then you could also... But what you do is you would throw in your actual black PlayStation disc into your computer, and it would somehow read that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't pirating games.
No.
It's pirating the console.
The console itself was... It was using your computer's hardware to run the PlayStation software.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, I just remember a few people...
Did that work
had,
pretty good?
From what I heard, it worked decent. And
I don't remember actually doing that.
It worked pretty well. See, I never used it, but I have a couple friends who tried it out, and it worked okay. The only thing is you couldn't play any really intensive game.
Well, that's
you know,
the thing.
Anything super fast. Or...
It would be funny to try that now and see, like, how they ran on, like, a really modern PC, because, you know, the PCs at that time and the consoles at the time were... You know, they weren't too far apart. The parity on the processing. I mean, there were certain things that they had to sacrifice for mass market with regards to a console. But you know, the mid range PC at that time was very similar to some of the things that a console could run because they came out way beyond.
Because like even just the processor speed of the PlayStation, I want to say that was. Maybe in the 30 to 40, 50 range.
Okay.
By the time 1990 came around, our processor speeds were like in the 400 or 500 megahertz per second. It's more of the programming, the
and
emulation.
The optimization.
Yeah,
and the
it's more about the actual emulation of it.
But no, like now, it would be interesting
now,
to run that and see
also,
how that runs.
Also,
now.
Those programs probably gone through so many iterations mm-hmm. that they're probably just much better now.
Well, I know that with PlayStation, when my brother was doing some missionary work, all he could bring with him was a laptop, but he wanted a bunch of PlayStation games from me.
Okay.
Because he wanted to play for fun. Mm-hmm. So he was doing PlayStation on his laptop. This was, probably 4 years ago, and it ran probably better on his laptop than it ran on my PlayStation.
Well, there we go. Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, I want to do that test. I would love to take a look at that.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure most of those guys gone through so many iterations. I think the ones that aren't really updated anymore are the 16 and 8-bit console.
Because there's no need to.
Yeah, there's no need. Like, I think that
ZSNES.
I don't think they have had an update for, like, 4 or 5 years.
And then...
It's pretty good already. So.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite NES one was Nesticle.
Nesticle, yep.
Yeah, Nesticle.
Oh, yeah.
With the icon...
That was a penis.
Balls,
yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a scrotum.
It was great. I love that.
Wild West of the Internet.
Oh, man. You could download, like, a package of, like, every Nintendo game.
Yeah.
And it would be, what, like, Not even 100 megs?
Maybe like 80 megs.
You like every Nintendo game ever made, and it's less than 100 megs. What? And on that high-speed internet, you're done with that in less than like 5 minutes.
What's funny is also the save state stuff. You could save like in the middle of something, and what was always great was like saving over something that you didn't mean to. You were like falling down a pit, and you saved by accident. You wanted to hit load, and then that was your save point. Now, so every time you hit load, you just keep falling in the pit.
I hit F9, not F5.
And sometimes, it would happen. You were far enough in game, and I would just keep pressing that load and just thinking something else would happen.
It's going to revert. Yeah, it will revert. I can't keep falling down the pit forever. Yeah.
But that was cool because you could do that with games that didn't have save states. Yeah. So, like, if you were playing through Blaster Master,
you could actually play through it.
One of my favorites was playing through any of the games that they didn't mean for you to play from start to finish, but they were passwords. Like Metroid.
Yeah.
With save states, all of a sudden it's an amazing game.
Yeah.
Well, it's just easier.
It's just much more manageable.
Spend 10 minutes putting in a password and getting it wrong.
The original Metal Gear.
Yeah. Then it's great nowadays with things like Retrode, where, you could just plug a game, the cartridge, into your computer,
and then, the ROM would just download
and then you'll just play on an emulator.
Now, does that only work? I've seen that. Is that only Super Nintendo, or do they have one?
No, they have Super NES, Genesis, and I think they have, what is it? What's the word for it? Like a cartridge expansion thing for N64.
Okay.
And I want to save for something else.
Well, I want to get that Super NES NES one then, definitely.
Yeah. And then you can plug your actual controllers into it.
Into the
little thing.
Yeah, and one nice thing with something like this is, that whole fear that especially is around today of my battery backed up games are 20 years old.
Yep.
That battery's going to die. And with Retrode, they have it where you can actually just copy everything to your computer, you open it up, the case, put in a new battery, and then you could plug it in, and you could transfer those saves right back in.
I need to do that with my Saturn. My Saturn, the battery in the back, needs a battery, because every time I turn it on, it asks me to reset the clock, so.
Yeah, I haven't personally used it, but I would highly recommend everything that I've read about that Retrode. And I think it's just retro.org or something. It's a German...
It's actually
a couple of German guys who made it. So it ships out of Germany. I think there's a couple U.S. video game stores, the few independent ones, actually have it on their websites to buy. Or you can buy it directly from there. You'll just have to buy it in euros. You have to do a little conversion. But
they charge you international transactions.
Yeah, I want to say it's like about 70 to 60 euros.
Okay, that's not terrible.
Or dollars, something around there. It's less than $100, and it's pretty cool because you can actually
the backing up thing I like a lot.
Well, yeah, that, and you can actually use your cartridges
instead of
feeling kind of dirty about like I kind of downloaded this game and never bought it.
Well, that's a funny thing because like I did some of that, but a lot of times I would end up going back and playing games that I actually owned. So it was. I didn't feel quite as dirty about it, but it was
we were good pirates.
Well,
we're still pirates.
We were pirates.
Yeah, especially but, with oh, go ahead
with everything in there.
Yeah, especially with arcade games.
Yeah, arcade games were definitely the ones that I think we tried the most that we played.
Yeah, I want to table the arcade thing for a bit. We'll have that like a special arcade.
That should podcast. Be yeah something
we'll
we
just,
talk about.
We'll just run through arcades because we're already so far behind on the arcades.
Yeah.
We can't really talk. We can't start talking about arcade.
Well, I mean,
now.
My first experience was an arcade game. But there's so much in between then and now.
Yeah, and just like the whole culture is way different. So, we'll take a break
while we're here. Just because I was looking it up. So that Retrode is pretty much 65 euros.
What's the website?
Retrode.org.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's all in euros. So. Yeah,
or you can do some searching online and find one.
Yeah, I know when I'm looking into getting that like this winter season.
Cool.
I think there's a shop like in Ohio or Michigan that has a bunch of them and they're selling them.
And it's like 25 or so euros for N64 adapter, for Game Boy and Game Boy Advance adapter, Master System adapter, of course. Master System, you can always buy that Genesis thing
And
it had the Master System adapter.
Okay, so, cool. Yeah, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and start talking about PS2.
Yeah, sure. We've got a lot to cover there.
And a lot less Pete.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-
we'll just jump right into PlayStation 2. So, what's some games that we want to talk about PlayStation 2, Kevin?
You know, a good one to just bring up early on was, we kind of touched around it, but Summoner.
No,
I just want to bring it up for one reason. Had that video, the D&D video that got everyone so hyped up for it, and then the game finally comes out, and it's just a steaming pile of crap.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is we talked about this during, you know, when you brought up how you got your PlayStation 2 and how I was working at EV at the time, and the fact that the launch lineup for the PlayStation 2 was not good.
It was probably the worst launch lineup I've seen for any console, and...
What is that Square game that was a fighting game?
The Bouncer.
Oh,
that came later.
Yeah, that was supposed to be revolutionary, and it was kind of boring.
I could see what they tried to do.
What were they trying to do?
Make a bad game.
They were trying to build hype for Square, and it's almost like that ping pong, you know, from Rockstar.
Table tennis from Rockstar?
Yeah.
No.
No, because they're... It's the same principle of where they're trying to show off their new engine.
Okay.
And, yeah, unlike...
It was Ergy's the sequel. It's terrible.
It's telling that the first, like, 3 months, the best game was Fantavision, which was a fireworks simulator.
No, SSX.
Oh, yeah, SSX. Yeah, okay.
That was a good game.
That was the bright, shining beacon for the PlayStation 2, other than the fact that it was a DVD player.
Yeah, that was a big thing. It was a DVD player.
Of course, it's a DVD player that didn't even play... Like, I only had... That's my first DVD player. So, I had almost no DVDs. And slowly building a library. At Christmas, you know, System came out in September. Christmas, my brother, I think it's my brother, got me Princess Mononoke on DVD. And it's like, I want to watch this. I have a DVD player. This is so cool. I put it in and it didn't even work. Like, there's a good, 5% of DVDs that wouldn't play on PS2.
Well, the thing is that Sony did learn their lesson with that one, with the way their Nexus, the PS3, with the firmware updates automatically on your Blu-ray player, so everything works. Like, I have yet to find a Blu-ray that I can throw in my PS3 that doesn't work, because Sony knows what they're doing now with the firmware, and, like, this was, you know, because this was a new technology, so everybody was kind of learning their way through it. And I remember that the only way you could have a DVD player before the PS2 was in your computer. Because Scott, my roommate, when he got his new computer, he had that DVD player in it.
And let's call up, what was it, Kazaa?
My brother actually had, like, a first-gen DVD player, like an actual DVD player, and it was pretty rad.
Yeah.
I watched Blade on it.
Yeah.
And the menus were animated.
Yeah.
It was pretty rad.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, like, it was a new technology. It was digital video that you could skip around much easier on, and
you didn't
sound
have
quality
rewind
was better.
It before returning the tape.
And I'll do a little shout out. I hate you, Darnell, for teasing me that my brother had a DVD player and saying that we were rich. You're dumb. You had a car in high school, so shut up.
Oh snap! That's hate.
I love you.
But yeah, no, so like I remember watching The Sixth Sense on his DVD player.
Yeah,
and so this was like the first, you know, the first system that had a DVD player plus a game system. So a lot of people were like, oh, wow, that's really cool. But me working where I did, I was like, this is not... It's okay, but show me the games that I actually want to play on it before I'll actually invest in the
system. It took a little bit, and then it really got going.
It took almost a year before stuff came out.
Yeah, and from... I mean, just as we know, Sony was... It was weird that the PlayStation must have been so easy to program for, because a lot of people put out a lot of games early on for it. But then you get into the PS2, and if I remember correctly, wasn't it difficult to program for?
Yeah, it was a little more difficult.
That's the thing. Yeah. People weren't used to it, so that's why it took so long for them to come out with those games that started to, you know, that would make the PlayStation 2 as popular as it was and keep Sony at the top during that console generation.
Really at the top. PlayStation 2 is almost 200 million consoles, I think, sold.
Yeah, and, so, and of course, I mean, you know, you look at that, you look at those that big number, and you're like, I understand that, but then there's also the fact that a lot of people bought that as their DVD player more than just an actual gaming system. So, but it's that's the number itself still stands. So that's that is definitely a crazy achievement.
So what's like some of the first good games that you remember playing?
I think the first one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say Grand Theft Auto 3 came out 1 year after PS3.
Well, here's the funny thing.
Yeah, I want to say it was 2001-ish?
October 22nd, 2001.
Yeah, because remember they took out the plane sequences because there was supposed to be more plane stuff and they were scared about 9/11 stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the funny thing is, Dan, neither you or I actually owned a PlayStation when they came out.
Yeah, it was only my roommate, Eric.
Yeah, we were bumming off of Eric's PS2.
Yeah, he bummed off of my Dreamcast.
We know. And he put it out in the main room so everybody got to play.
We didn't even buy a GTA 3 game.
No, we didn't.
You just borrowed it from your store.
I borrowed it from my work.
For like months.
Well, I kept grabbing it. You could just check it out. So, I mean, it wasn't one of those games where they had limited copies of it. They had a million copies of it. So
that was
one of the perks of working where I did. It was pre-Gamefly. So I'm able to check out games from my work, and we got to play that. You got to power yourself through Metal Gear Solid 2.
Well, we'll start with GTA 3. GTA 3 is like, that's one of those games where in my feeling is like, it's kind of like a monolith of a game. Like you had like the ones in the past for me is like, you know, Super Mario 3, you had like Link to the Past, What was like a huge game? Metal Gear Solid. Those types of games where it's just like, oh, we're moving forward here. This is
the mark.
This is a new age.
Yeah, yes. this is a mark, and I think GTA 3 definitely is, because full 3D world, and it really felt like a big city.
Yep.
Even if I go back to it now, I know that I know that there's limitations to that. But
yeah.
It really felt like it was a real city.
You
could get lost. There was actual neighborhoods. There was places where you would kind of, and then you would start to recognize, it was kind of like driving around a city. You'd know, okay, well, this is where I have to turn to get to this place.
You would find your shortcuts, your routes that you would take. It wouldn't always necessarily be the shortest route, but it was the most familiar to you. So you're like, I know to take a right when I get to the park here, and then I know I can take that road all the way up to get to the neighborhood I need to get to.
And you couldn't set like your, you know, a map point, a custom one. So
no.
You didn't have any GPS type thing, so you had to learn those familiar landmarks.
Yeah. There was no there was really sense of scale with just like the traffic and all the people walking around.
Yep.
And just like the little secrets that you would get, and the shortcuts, fully voiced.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Fully voiced and pretty good voice, except for the main character.
Except for Claude,
who he became retroactively Claude in the GTA lexicon.
But no, the funny thing about that game is that I didn't really play that much. I checked it out from work, but you, Dan, were the one who actually played it.
I was obsessed with that game. You were
really obsessed with that game.
Well, it was fun because you could actually not even play the game. You could just fuck around.
Yeah.
There was that hill on the third island that I would just throw cars off of. And I just thought that was the funniest thing ever.
Well, that comes to our most infamous story about that game.
Oh, yeah, because the rarest car in that game is that ice cream truck.
Yep.
And then I just remember
watching this. Like, you weren't even really paying attention to it. You were just driving along the road trying to, you know, keep a nice line and go out through it. And then I think it was me or your roommate, Horace, who we heard the ding-ding-ding-ding, the ice cream.
Yeah, you could hear the ice cream truck song.
And then Horace went, oh, look, ice cream truck. I'm like, damn, this is an ice cream truck.
Holy crap, I moved heaven and earth to get that ice cream truck.
No, remember, you tapped it. Yeah, you tried to get it. You tapped it in like, the back bumper, and then the ice cream truck driver went, you know what, fuck it, I'm out. And went off that hill where you sent all those cars.
Off that cliff. And I went running after it.
Yes,
I went driving after it, and it just blew up.
Yep, and that was the most tragic incident in all of it.
Eventually, I got it, and trying to fit that in one of the garages was pretty impossible, I think.
What was fun is when you see a car blow up, and it's like, I need this car, I want it, and you try and nudge the burnt-out corpse back to your garage.
Yeah.
Because if you could get in your garage, it would get fixed.
Yeah. Yes.
That's messed up.
Yeah. And then,
oh, and trying to fit more cars in a garage than belong.
Playing car Tetris?
Yeah.
In the garage.
And I think if you could get, like, over half of the car in the garage when the door would close, it would still save it or something like that.
Of course, though, if you messed it up and you had too many cars, it saves, you come back, garage door opens, and the cars are rattling, and then they explode.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, I'll back off, I'll come back, and then they explode.
Well, that was a really, like, one of the first times in my gaming life where you could really see, like, emergent gameplay, like, the very roots of it, where stuff would just happen. Like, you'd be driving along, and there'd just be this huge accident, and cars start blowing up, cops would just be shooting stuff, and you're like, I don't even know what this is, what's happening?
I'm just going for a drive, and you guys just decided to start World War III.
Yeah, it would just, and then, or you would just, like, anger the cops, so you would get the five stars, or six stars, five,
it's
six
five.
Stars?
It's five.
Five stars, and you would get, like, the military and everything.
Oh, that's
and then,
six.
Oh, six,
six
yeah.
Was when the
six?
Tank
yeah.
shows
okay.
up.
And then you would just, you know, you would
I'd
have,
want
like...
that tank.
Well, yeah, you would have fun with just, like, trying to, like, do all of this
Survive
stuff.
Survive as long as you can.
And then that game, the I don't know if... Did Vice City and San Andreas have this, where, like, there were certain neighborhoods, and they would just aggro on you, like, if they hated
you?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, so they took this out in 4, and in the DLC ones, which... I kind of like, because it kind of got irritating when you drive to a neighborhood and you just shot up.
Especially, you have a nice car, and you're like, I need to get this thing in pristine condition.
The worst one was going through the Mafia neighborhood, where they carried shotguns.
Yeah.
And you drive through, and you just hear, boom, and your car blows
up. Chinatown wasn't so bad, but yeah, the Mafia neighborhood was bad. But, where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Emergent gameplay.
Yeah, so, like, you would get into this firefight with the cops, and then the military and stuff, and then the Chinese would be trying to kill you, and then they'd be, everybody would be talking. I remember, like, it feels like the Latino neighborhood in GTA 3, like, some guy ran me over with his pickup truck, and the gangster got out of his car, and he said, "No problem to kill you, man." And that became like a funny joke in our group for a while. It's like, it's no problem to kill you, man. Like, he parked his car on top of me, and my life just drained, and he got out of the car, walked away, while saying, no problem to kill you, man.
Obviously, he had a beef with you.
Yeah.
This is some slight that happened like 4 hours ago.
No fucks were given.
He cut me off in traffic.
The AI remembered, and it's like, oh yeah, he's gonna pay for that.
Oh, I remember getting the hydraulics car for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah, you get that on the second island, I think in the Latino Hispanic neighborhood or something, and
you
get
start
the car,
it bounce.
And you press the right
stick.
The horn button.
Yeah, the horn button, the right stick, you press it inside, and it would start bouncing. Oh, it was sweet! Or no, I think you actually just pushed it up and down, because you kind of...
We learned that way.
Yeah, we learned that
first,
later.
You're hitting the horn. It's like, this is cool. Yeah. Then you hit the stick a little, and it's like, whoa, I just popped up.
And
one
I remember
side.
Reading FAQs about it where, like, oh yeah, that could be the best handling car in the game because you could kind of shift the weight or something. I could never do it. But yeah, it was just rad. You'd be driving down the street with the soundtrack. We didn't even talk about the soundtrack.
Oh, such a great soundtrack.
And it didn't even have any license.
Yeah, no. It's not big name music.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I could remember some of the hip hop station.
Oh, I love the reggae
station. The reggae station. Oh, you're scaring me now, Mr. Scientist.
If you want the knowledge, get yourself
a scientist. And it was like, what the heck is this? Ja Radio.
Yeah,
Ja Radio.
But the Yardies was
the Yardie. Yeah, those were the guys with the bouncy car. The Yardies. Yeah. Yardies, and I always like putting it on the classical station because it was always funny, like mowing down a whole bunch of people while like freaking Beethoven would be playing or something.
Yeah,
that was just a tremendous game.
So many hidden things, like the secret jumps, like there is a ramp there. I don't know where I need to get to. I need to find the right line with the right car, hit that ramp, and when you hit it, you'll want to aim so you're a little off, and your car starts spinning in the air.
Yeah, and your guy was hyper allergic to water.
That's right.
If your car ever flipped over the bridge and fell into the water, it was over for you. There was the one bridge that actually raised up for the boats. And if somehow somebody behind you got freaked out and started jamming their gas, and you would just get pushed off the edge. That was the worst.
One of the best though was with that. If you did just right, you could glitch it where a car, you'll be on the lifted up part of the bridge. There'll be a car with you. And if you you know, shoot them or whatever, spook them, if you do it right, they'll drive along the road underneath, but in the air, the altitude of where the bridge went up to, and you'll see this car just driving off into the sunset.
Well, that game also, didn't it also have the button cheats that you could enter into?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was one
of
the
cheats,
first ones
yeah.
that you could do. So.
People rampage.
Yeah, there
and
was all kinds of crazy
with weapons.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then it's over.
The civilians with weapons yeah. thing. That was one of the fun ones.
Like
where
a granny's walking down the street with a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Well, and then I remember one of the really fun things I thought that we had when we tried to break that game was when we found the airport.
Yeah,
and
with
you
that
found
one
the birdie,
yeah, birdie.
The birdie that had
the
no
dodo.
Wings.
The dodo, that's right.
And that had the clipped wings because,
yeah.
like you said, they cut out all the flying
yeah, they,
stuff
that,
in that.
Well, at least I think that's the story. I want to say that that's true.
But
and
you get that,
fly to fly.
You could get it up in the air.
You
and
had
you
to, like, push forward
and then pull
up,
back.
So
yep.
it would, like, bounce
you
up.
You had to bounce it up into the air.
I think once I got it into the city
yeah.
and turned once.
Yep.
And that was it.
Crash.
Yeah. It's impossible to fly.
Oh, man.
I'm glad they got those back in the other games. The flying in that was pretty fun.
Yeah,
so.
I really hope that the GTA 5 actually had planes, because 4 didn't have any planes.
See,
they had helicopters.
Well, with how big they're saying 5
yeah,
is, without planes,
gonna
it's going
well,
to be horrible.
Well, the funny thing is that what we were talking about, you like the original soundtrack that they had in that game. I was a big fan of the Vice City. And
of
the,
course. Well,
oh, yeah.
I liked
Vice
the license.
City.
I loved the
Vice
license.
City is good.
I love the licensed soundtracks. But I heard that the new game is not going to it's going to have an original score.
Wow.
It's not going to have licensed music
Whoa,
this
that
time.
That will be interesting.
Which
bring
is,
back Ja Radio. I want a shirt that says bring back Ja Radio.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that means that there's no licensed songs in it or not, but
at
I
all.
Just remember reading something
they're,
that they
oh,
said
that's
that
cool.
an original score.
I am so looking forward to 5, like, immensely.
Well,
but
yeah,
so, I mean, you know, with GTA 3, we can talk about the successor.
Vice City was amazing.
Rad.
Ray Liotta is the main character in that
yeah.
game. Tommy yeah. Vercetti.
It was rad.
The only thing I didn't like on Vice City, but I know why they did, the setting, there were no hills.
Yeah.
So you couldn't shoot people off a cliff.
Yeah, because it was in Miami, so it was just all flat. And it looked great and looked awesome. And then I love the golf cart was in that.
Oh yeah,
it was the one
golf club.
Yeah, the golf club.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a rad game. There was that like club that you'd go into and stuff, and
you
get all the businesses.
You could first buy property.
Yeah.
You could buy clothes,
yep.
although you didn't keep your clothes. It just get out of two
yeah.
stars for free.
Yeah, I think there was even a bicycle in that game.
There
right?
were motorcycles.
No,
no, was that
just a motorcycle?
Just motorcycles. Bicycles. That's the big thing on
San Andreas.
Yeah.
So yeah, you go to
and then yeah, I mean the soundtrack for Vice City was rad because it was in the 80s.
It was all 80s and
oh.
like that was because that's when I grew. That's like where we grew up and like I had MTV, so
yeah.
like listening to that stuff, I would just because they had such a great soundtrack and pretty much any song on any station was something that I listened to when I was
of course.
Growing up. I mean, it was you know everything from. God, I mean, was there a Flock of Seagulls?
Depeche Mode,
and they had the way they broke up the stations was really well done too, because it was based on genre. But in the '80s, they didn't really do that. They just played like you had your great '80s radio station
yeah.
or MTV. They just played music videos. But it was cool because now you could delineate what kind of mood am I in with Tommy Vercetti? Am I
yeah?
In
those even the classic hip hop, right?
Yeah,
yeah. There was classic hip hop station too.
Hair rock.
Yeah, there was a hair metal station. Oh, just such a great game. And then, I mean, of course, we move on into San Andreas after that.
Which is, like...
I played, but I never beat. Did you beat
I never beat
San Andreas?
Kevin, you're
the only one who beat San Andreas. Because I think you and I got about to the same point, I would guess. We get through... You get through this... All the
Los
way to
Santos.
Vegas. Yeah, you get all the way through, like, the up to Vegas. Like, the... Where,
Las Venturas.
And then... Because you had gone through so much, and it had been so long and drawn out, and you had that huge swath of land that you were going through in that second area, because it was you had to go so far to get to missions.
Yeah, you had, like, canyony, deserty...
Well, and it was technically, wasn't it supposed to be going all the way north to, like, San Francisco?
Yeah, San Fierro was...
Yeah,
yeah
was,
San Fierro.
So, like, you're traveling all this time just for a mission, and then...
You'd die.
Yeah, you'd die, or you... And the way the checkpoints were set up in that, it wasn't necessarily the best.
No, but...
Because it was so spread out, but
that
yeah.
That game was epic.
It was epic.
It was unbelievable. And that was the first time where they really had, like, other than, I don't know who else was voicing in Vice City other than Ray Liotta, but
I think there were some voice actors.
But San Andreas had, like, a lot of, Samuel L. Jackson was one of the cops.
Yep.
And that was, and that was set in the 90s, and there was so much, like 90s, like,
Boys in the Hood.
Well, like, a million times.
No, I know. It was Boys in the Hood pretty much the start of that game. Was
yeah,
like the Boys
yeah.
In the Hood
you had the, game. You had the black cop yep. who was, like, harassing the kid. Oh, man, this is so
And you
good.
Had, like, all the call-outs to, like, Eazy-E.
Yeah.
What was it? Lowrider, I think, or...
Yeah, yeah.
Eazy-Rider.
Eazy-Rider.
Well, yeah.
What was the name of the gang? Grove Street, or Grove...
Oh, Grove Street something.
So I was about to say Grove Street, whatever.
And you had the,
life.
You had the, you were in the cul-de-sac, that was
yeah,
where your first
yeah.
place was.
And you could pick up dudes, you
yep.
could, you, let's roll Being with some
posse.
Homies.
Yeah.
Then
you go
did
to
silly,
the gym and get real
Exactly,
buff.
They
yeah.
did silly stuff like that, where you had, you know, your you could go to the gym and get buff.
James Woods, yeah.
He was awesome in that as Tenpenny.
I really hope that they have a lot of that, like, going to the gym and all that customization stuff in the... In
five. I would say I have the customization, but not so much necessarily the mini game stuff with it. Because, I mean, it was
yeah.
okay
yeah.
for a little bit,
yeah,
but then
true.
Having to maintain
very
that
true.
Stuff, it was just...
Very
it,
true.
Oh,
yeah, your guy would get fat
yeah.
if you just kept eating fat.
And then
food.
The other thing, I really didn't like the weapon and swimming and all of that skills, how slow they'd level up.
Or actually leveling those
yeah,
instead of
yeah,
having to just be good at that.
Especially leveling up swimming. You just go out into the water and swim in little circles, hold your stick in one direction, and then flip the channel, watch some TV.
That's why I never did stuff like...
What a
like,
crazy game.
Like,
right?
I didn't do that. Like, I didn't delve
oh,
that deeply.
That was really,
then,
like, their kitchen sink
the
game.
Worst,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The worst part, though, the one part of the game that almost broke it for me, both times I did it, the flight school. The flight school was such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I don't think I did that either. Because, like we were saying, there's so much in that game.
The
flight
school,
about the flight school.
Yeah.
The flight school was so bad where it'd have, like, all right, lesson one, take off in your plane. And it's pretty easy. And it gave you a grade. And if you didn't get a good enough grade, like, if you didn't get 20 points, then you'd fail and you had to redo it. And then eventually it's, okay, now you're going land. Okay. Now you're going to take off, fly, you know, a loop, come back, and land. Now you're going to fly, go through some rings in the sky, do a loop-de-loop through one of the rings, and then come back and land, and you're missing one point on each part of it. And you land, you barely do it, it's real hard control with the janky PS2 analog. You finally land, you barely do it, and it goes... Oh, yeah, you have 16 points. You need 17 pass. And you'd spend hours on it. Bree and I, you know, my wife, we're married at the time, and we were playing Heroes of Might and Magic 3, hot seat game where you could keep trading off who's playing.
While you're playing.
So, do flight school, and she really wanted to play Heroes 3. I wanted to do GTA, and I told her, okay, I'll play Heroes 3 with you. But every time it's my turn, you're trying the flight school.
Oh, God.
And we kept trading off, and it took us almost 4 hours to get through that whole thing.
But at least you're playing a fun game while you were playing the
yeah,
game that you weren't so good with.
Normally, I'd rather watch TV
yeah,
or
oh,
something.
Yeah, oh, I get you. But that's... No,
but
yeah.
Yeah, the GTA's on PS2, like, I mean,
I have
that's almost worth the price of a PS2. Like,
and San Andreas had some great tongue-in-cheek type of humor, like, this silent dude in a leather jacket with dark brown hair shows up for a street race. Completely silent. He's Claude from GTA 3.
Oh, yeah,
3.
I remember that.
And,
oh,
like, they
yeah.
even comment on, oh, that crazy silent motherfucker won't say a damn word.
Yep.
Then, like, I love...
He steals your woman!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Although she was the crazy psycho.
But still, it was your woman at the time, and he just shows up
and
thanks her.
One mission where you fly your plane back Liberty City.
Yeah.
And you actually go through one of the restaurants in Little Italy.
But no, and then, getting back to the GTA games, like Dan said, it was just, I think at that point that I had been a little burned out on the Grand Theft Auto games because there had been three of them on that system. So I played the first one all the way through and beaten it, you know, GTA 3 at that point. I played through Vice City and beaten that. And then I got to San Andreas and I played it and I'm like, wow, there's so much to do in this.
It's so long.
Yeah, exactly. It was really long. It didn't feel... It's kind of like what happened in their last game that they did on the PS or on the 360 with Red Dead, when you have, you know, that whole section in
You're
Mexico.
You're crazy. Red Dead is their best game.
Mexico's a great... but the Mexico part is not the...
Yeah, that's fine, but it's... Yeah. I believe that Red Dead is their best game.
I'm not saying that wasn't, but that was what San Andreas felt like with me. It had that long sequence where it was... not a whole lot was happening.
Once you left Los Santos for a first time and you met the crazy hippie, mm-hmm. and you're doing stuff in mountains, and it's like, just get me back to the crime game.
Exactly. And what did your CJ look like? Because mine was pretty dope. I had the super buff CJ.
Oh, mine was buff as can be.
I like having him fat.
Huh?
I like having him fat.
You like fat CJ?
I like fat CJ.
I was like super ripped CJ with a wife beater.
I'm gonna eat all the burgers.
The crazy like black sunglasses that were straight out of the early 90s, and the high top fade with the Z in the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
That was my CJ with a big gold dookie chain. I was like, yes, that is stereotype right there, and
see,
I love it.
I have the fade. I have the high top fade, but other than that. Decked out in nice suit, like I was businessman.
No, my CJ was thugged out.
I watched Minutes of Society.
I did, yeah. I know what they look like. I lived in Southern California. I watched the LA riots as they happened.
Weird. Awkward.
Yeah. Awkward pause. Okay. But
John meant gangsters.
Yes, gangsters. Not...
Anyway. Awkward pause again.
Yeah. We'll edit this out.
Sure, we'll get rid of that.
I thought it was real and raw.
Uncut and raw.
Uncut.
Raw and uncut. So, yeah.
So, at that point...
another game on PS2?
Well, the one... I mean, we when I moved back to Seattle, after being gone for about a year, and I did have a PS2 at that point, I remember...
Well, I bought a PS2 at this point after college.
Yeah, you bought one right after college. I think I had one in... I had bought one while I was still living in California. And I remember playing the God of War games, the first two God of War games on that system.
Yeah.
God of War 1 and God of War 2.
You're the God of War guy.
I think I am the only God of War guy. Nobody else here likes to play those games.
I liked it. I liked the first one. Yeah. I never got extremely into it as much as you did.
No, those games are amazing.
Yeah,
oh, so much fun. Because... just the sense of scale for a third-person action game like that, it was crazy. And plus, I like Greek mythology, so that was one of the really big hooks on it. So I like, you know, the whole gods thing, and I think this might have had something to do with the fact that I liked the Hercules TV show as much as I did.
That show was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean,
Kevin Sorbo rock.
Exactly, had that same.
Never thought I'd say that.
No, it had that... But the God of War games, if you think about it, has that same kind of treatment of, like, the Greek mythology, where, you know, it's kind of serious, but it's also very... a little bit humorous as well.
And let's kind of just pump it up to...
Exactly.
...unreal height.
Exactly. So it wasn't a, like, a serious telling of the Greek mythology. So, you know, you had the badass guy Kratos, who you find out is serving the God of War at this point. And it had a really...
Wasn't it like Mars hated you or something?
Ares. The God of War. So Ares, you were serving Ares, and, you know, just...
Sorry, I was
playing,
saying the
no,
Roman
it's okay.
name.
I got you.
My mythology screwed up.
But the combat was really tight in that. That was one of the first ones I remember where you had, like, quick time events when you were killing certain enemies.
Yeah.
So, and the weapon that he had, the Blades of Chaos, were really cool to use.
Yeah, you'd get all those crazy combos.
Yeah, you'd, like, swirl the blades around you, and when you get those leveled up, there was one where you could jump in the air and just, like, twirl them around you and just be this whirling dervish of death.
Then watching what he does during those quick time, like, executions with those blades.
Exactly, and, you know, when he's running through a city... And it's like, oh, my life's a little bit low. Oh, these civilians are fleeing. I'm going to grab this civilian, stab him in the chest, and get some life out of him.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense, because that civilian's alive. I'm Kratos.
Yeah. the thing with those games was that just, I mean, it was pretty unbelievable the graphics that they were pumping out there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Xbox was a more advanced system, but it was rivaling everything on the Xbox.
Yeah,
like,
when
bar
it first,
none.
It was indeed.
Especially 2. Especially 2, the graphics in 2 was, I mean, that was mind-boggling that it was coming out of a PlayStation.
Yeah, in PlayStation 2, when the next-gen system, the Xbox, had come out, you're like, this is still a relevant system.
Yeah. It's just, you know, always...
The set pieces in that game were just amazing. They were really good.
First-party development on Sony systems is always, like, top-notch.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's kind of trailed off recently, but they still have... They still have a couple aces in the hole that they pull out, like just like Microsoft or Nintendo.
Well, I mean, you know, just on a tangent, the Sony, the Uncharted games.
They're good.
It's another one where it's just like, I can't believe this is coming out of
PS3. Uncharted 3 was gorgeous. Funny thing is, I never finished Uncharted 2, but I played Uncharted 3 all the way beginning to end. But that we'll get there.
Yeah, so one of the first games that I bought on a PlayStation 2, and I promptly spent the whole weekend sequestered from everybody in the entire world, was Romance of the Three Kingdoms Part Whatever.
I think seven?
Eight, seven.
Oh, man, that was a cool game.
Yeah.
Was it just like every other Romance of the Three Kingdoms?
Yes, but it was rad.
Okay.
And the visuals finally started to look a little good.
So like at the one end of the Chinese history spectrum, you have Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which is your strategy, like, delve deeply into simulation style. And then at the other end, you have your Dynasty Warriors.
Which is, that's the realistic one.
Yeah.
Because it's just murdering Chinese people all day, every day.
Of course. That's funny because, like, I really love that Romance Three Kingdoms stuff. I never really got into the Dynasty Warriors thing. That's why, like, I was really quiet last week when you guys went off on Dynasty Warriors and what is the bad Mystic Fire. Anyway,
Mystic Heroes doesn't exist.
Yeah,
no, Dynasty Warriors is... I can enjoy those games and play them without delving too much into them. And the reason I can is because they're all the same. They really are. Yeah. It's like...
Mash the button, mm-hmm. and then do your musu
Find the character that you like, who has the cool weapon, who does the moves the way you want to do them, and just mash the buttons.
Yep.
But in, like, Romance, you could start off as, like, kind of a low-level soldier, general guy, and you would go to the different kingdoms in the Three Kingdoms period in China, and you'd, like, offer services, kind of, like, smooth with some people, get in line, and then you would be promoted, you would get an army, and then you would, like, be on battles that like, the king or emperor or whatever of that kingdom would, like, tell you to go to. And there was, like, all these, like, little events that would happen.
Oh, poetry contests.
Yeah, poetry contests, stuff like that.
Duels,
yeah, you would have duels, you would challenge guys to duels, and then there was, like, there was even a battlefield section where you would actually have the battles, and you would, like, you know, try
well, yeah, because was that Koei who did that game too?
Yeah.
Because Koei did all those, because they did other games. Well, they did other games like that too, that were, aside from the Romance series. I remember on the Super Nintendo, a game called Gemfire.
Yeah.
That was a fantasy, it was just like totally like fantasy, but it was the same style.
Yeah. So yeah, you would do stuff where, like, you know, you'd set like a field on fire so you could get like better position or something, and the winds would change and stuff. And, like, you would, like, sometimes you'd set the field on fire, and then it would, like, the fire would go on your troops. And it was just crazy, like, the amount of stuff you could do. And it was just such a big game.
The intrigue.
Yeah.
Like, when, I remember you were saying once, it said, like, oh, Cow Cow or whoever is staying at your castle, do you want to murder him in his sleep?
Yeah. And I was like, yes!
Well, that's the funny...
It wasn't Cow Cow. Cow was untouchable in that game.
Oh, yeah.
In all those games.
That's why I like that's
we're probably saying that wrong.
No, you got it right. It's Cow Cow. I'm pretty sure it's Cow Cow. Kevin would know.
Yeah,
you read that stuff. So
yeah.
You read all of the romance novels and things like that. That's what I was going to say, is like all the same names. So you played both, Kevin. You played Romance and you played Dynasty Warriors. So the funny thing is like in your mind, when you're playing Romance, are you picturing like... Lu Bu with his
people
crazy big tassels and like using his staff to like murder thousands of random Chinese people.
See, it's so weird when you put those two games together in one mental picture as well as the book,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, where did they get the idea that Lu Bu has these giant mantis antenna things coming out of his helmet?
Sure. You don't mess with Lu Bu.
No. Mess with Lu Bu.
His horse is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Horse is crazy in all of the versions of that.
That game was rad. I literally played that a whole weekend. So like, I got home from work and I bought that game, and I was just like, nope, not doing anything but playing this, going to the convenience store, buying some chicken, and that's
oh,
it.
The convenience store.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. another game that I bought
thing I want to add on that, what I really liked was that game had so many different settings. Remember, you could pick
you could be what Yellow
era
Turban
you
Rebellion.
Were in. You could also pick, do you start as the emperor, as a governor, as a
warlord. Warlord was the second one below the emperor.
Yeah, warlord. And then, like, there's even, you're an unemployed traveling guy.
Yeah.
Like,
I always
you
like
are
to
completely
pick that first,
free.
With, like,
you
a can, vagabond?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd always pick that first and then get ingrained with the kingdom and then start
there's games today that do that now, too, which is kind of crazy that vein of game is still considered viable
I love that kind of game. I love the strategy element and political intrigue and all that Game of Thrones stuff. that's right up my alley.
So the next, you said you were
yeah. The
game
other game
that
I bought when I bought my PS2 was Ico. And yeah, Ico, awesome game, pretty awesome.
I've never played Ico. I've never gotten far enough into Ico to actually finish it and figure out the endings or anything like that.
Ico was a first-party developer for Sony, and they made a game that's, pretty kind of unique. It's kind of just basically a puzzle game, and there's one huge...
Presented as art.
Yeah, there's one huge castle, and you have this girl that you're holding her hand through this whole thing, and... There's like these
like a minimalist storytelling is what
minimalist
I would
storytelling. Nothing's really explained.
No.
There's a lot of like suggestion and that kind of stuff, and it was really cool because the castle just looked awesome,
mm-hmm.
and the architecture was just great, and the graphics on a PS2 was pretty amazing. Just like the stuff and the sense of scale, and the fact that. It really felt, I mean, there were loading screens and all that kind of stuff, but it really felt like the castle was just, like, one huge piece, because you would see other parts of levels that you've either gone through or levels you're going to, and you could see them in the background or in, like, the foreground or something like that, and it's just tremendous.
Well, there would be portions where you'd, like, change the way the castle looks, like, whole, like, or you'd open up big areas.
Yeah, you'd open up big areas and stuff like that, and it was just... You know, it was one of those games that really developed, an attachment with that girl that you would bring around and you'd save her and stuff, because the enemies would go after her and you'd have to let go of her hand if you wanted to, like, start fighting and stuff, and then you'd, like, be fighting someplace and she'd get captured and you'd have to run and try to grab her and things like that. And then, that game is manipulative as all hell, because, even when you would hold hands with her, your controller would vibrate with her pulse and stuff like that. So silly.
Well,
the
fact
think
that you
about,
had to hold a button to hold her hand.
Yeah, you
the
had
time.
To hold it the whole time. And, yeah, it's so silly to think about, but it's, you know, widely regarded in gaming circles as, like, one of, like, the artistic games. Like, if you want to present games as art, like,
yeah.
that's a good example.
Well, and like we were saying, there wasn't a whole lot of storytelling involved within it. There's not a lot of narrative. There's a couple of sentences.
Yeah, the ending is
there.
Like the ending is like you save her and then you're like on a beach and you're not sure if she's dead or not and you kind of walk off.
Sure.
Into I was really sad.
Were you playing this by yourself for the most part?
I was
part?
Playing that by myself. I was really emotional.
Well,
emotional into that game.
I remember it was difficult for you to actually get that game, too, you told me.
Oh, yeah, well, when I bought my PlayStation, and I bought that, and I think I also bought Romance at the same time, and I remember, I think I was in a GameStop or something, and I asked the guy, it was like, oh, do you have a copy of Ico? And the guy looked at me like...
Icon?
He was like, Icon? What are you talking about? And then... Yeah, and then he's like, you want to pre-order? It's like, no, it's been out for like a year. Like, it's okay.
Wait,
like,
Echo, like,
yeah.
Echo Dolphin?
Fuck you.
Hey, did you want to pick up a Xbox?
Yeah.
How about a Game Doctor?
Game Doctor.
Oh,
gosh. Stop it.
Oh, yeah.
You want a subscription to Game Informer? Or whatever?
Yeah, it was Game Informer.
Yeah, Game Informer.
Sign up for a Power Play.
Yeah. But that was a game that really, like... You know, kind of on an emotional level, probably maybe first time since one of the Final Fantasies on Super Nintendo that I was just like, I was, like, heartbroken at the end. I was like, what happened to her? Why is such a melancholy French ending? Like, I feel so bad.
The French ending, one of our favorite terms.
Yeah, nobody's happy. I mean, I was not happy at the end of Ico.
No.
I'm not happy that they're not making any more games.
What about The Last Guardian, Dan?
Yeah, shut up. They're not making. Okay. That studio's done.
I know.
That's never coming out. Last Guardian's never coming out.
It's too bad, too, because that was your only reason for wanting to get a PS3.
We have two games from that studio, and they're both awesome, and
Since we're talking about Ico, why don't we go into the second one?
And then the other game came out a few years later, Shadows of Colossus.
That one I actually did watch you play, and that was a lot of fun. Like,
Shadows of Colossus was rad.
Sense of scale
was rad. That was another unique game. I mean, just, like,
the fact that you felt like a hero, like a man on a quest.
There's a couple things with that game. First of all, there's, like, no enemies other than the huge Colossus. So it's a game of boss fights. 16 boss fights. So half of the game is traveling there and trying to figure out how to get there.
It was a huge
world. Like, there were, like, forests, there was deserts, ruins. There was, like, ruins.
Well, and then things would open up as you would take out the Colossus. Colossi.
Yeah. So you get there, and then the actual Colossus, trying to figure out how to beat him, was the whole challenge of that game.
Yep.
And then you had this awesome horse.
Yeah. Argo.
Argo. Argo. Argo. Oh, man. Fucking Argo. Spoilers, but the horse dies, and it's really sad.
Yeah, I remember when he died.
I was really upset.
You were very upset when Argo...
Argo saved me because he made me get onto the ledge, and then he fell off, and I was not happy.
Nope.
It was the last level.
You had your cool sword, too, that would reflect the... the light beams.
So you would hold up your sword.
As
long as there was sunlight, you would point... Because I remember there was this one part where you're traveling through this dark forest, mm-hmm. and you'd have to find, like, little spots of light.
Because
you would just, like, get lost forever. And, you know, the game was funky because there was a lot of small little things. Like, there was, like, I think birds that you could shoot down and little, like, slugs or something.
Well,
like,
remember
chameleons.
The main tower was climbing.
Yeah,
at the
end, because you would slowly get upgraded.
Grip meter.
Grip meter. Yeah, so you could actually climb all the way to the top and see, like, all the animals up there. But, yeah, it was, I mean, with the hero stuff, it was a really unique game because, you know, at first it's a kid and, He's bringing this woman who kind of looks like the Ico woman, and then he lays her on this table, and then it seems like he's trying to revive her.
Yep.
And then there's this god or whatever that's telling you that if you destroy these things and you get their essence, you can bring her back to life. And the god, the deity or whatever, is telling you that these things are bad, mm-hmm. right? But when you go to fight the Colossus, a lot of them are not really bad. I mean, some of them are super, super aggressive, but a lot of them are just kind of docile. They don't even mind you.
No.
Until you stab them.
Yeah, until you stab them, then they start getting crazy, and it feels really sad when they start dying.
Well, yeah, the more of them you kill, the more you're...
Well, even just, like, stabbing them, like, they would just scream out in pain mm-hmm. and stuff, and it would feel really bad.
You gotta find those weak points.
Yeah, and over the course of the game, you start thinking, like, am I even doing the right thing? Mm-hmm. Like, but there's no choice in the matter.
He's on his singular quest.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
And then there's these guys that are trying to look for you also.
I remember that.
The middle of the game, suddenly, like, the same path that you took, there's these bunch of knights that look like the knights that took the kid in Ico in the beginning of the game to where his thing was. There's huge websites about just the connections.
Yeah, there is.
You never know if they're really connected.
Well, the funny thing is in the HD version of that game, the HD remix on the PS3, the menus that they did, like, when you go back and forth between the two games, there's something in the middle, like, because it whooshes from one game to the other.
What?
There's some image in the middle of that as it's whooshing across that I've tried to look for when I played that game.
Oh.
And it's, I don't know what it is.
You have that?
I had it. I rented it. But I kind of want to... Like, I tried to play it again, and it's just... The games look a lot better, but it's just the way that the gameplay is. It's not something I could go back to, I think, and play myself.
I mean, Shadows had a lot of bad stuff you know, with it, the frame rate was super crazy.
And they did fix that in the HD version.
The frame rate was crazy. The camera was all over the place. Mm-hmm. The controls were kind of janky.
But you played that game the more experience, for the atmosphere.
Yeah, the experience of playing that game was pretty rad. And then the ending of the game was unbelievable. Like, you finally, you get the boss.
The last Colossus?
Yeah, you get the last Colossus, and then the deity, like, gets all of its... It's slowly gaining its power.
Yep.
Because it's going to help your
girlfriend.
Doesn't
your it start looking more and more crazy?
Yeah, it looks more and more crazy, and then he finally turns on you. Mm-hmm. So you have to fight this thing, and then you absorb all of his power, and then you kill all of those knights that are trying to, like, stop you from bringing about the end of the world, and then you, like, die.
Yep.
And then, yeah.
And then there's that long credit sequence.
Yeah. It's just, it's a tremendous game.
And then that last shot of the game where you're just like, what?
Yeah, the last shot where it looks like you're the horned kid from
from Ico.
It's tremendous. Like, it's like playing, it's like watching like an art film, like a Polish art film or something. It's like, I don't know what I'm looking at, but I think this is kind of cool.
Well, that's why I think I was satisfied.
Better than a Polish art film.
I was satisfied watching you play that game more than I was actually playing it, so.
That's how I felt also.
Yeah.
All right, so I talked a lot about PS2. You guys take over next game.
Okay. Well, actually, this is a game that you got us into, Dan. So you're going to have to talk about it with us.
What? Well, not if you choose not.
Well, Prince of Persia.
Oh,
remember the first
Sands
Prince of Persia?
Yeah, such a good game.
Yes, it was. I mean, just I remember that was you bought that game, and you brought it up to my apartment and started playing it because this is when you could take your memory card up and start playing it. And I had the bigger TV. I had the nicer TV and the sound system.
Yeah.
So you bring up your PS2 memory card and your copy of the game, and you start playing through Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. And I think the next thing we knew, like 8 hours had passed.
Yeah.
And you were almost done with the game.
Yeah.
And we took a break.
It's such a rad game. It's just the animations were great. You could wall run.
Just the
reversal of time. The fighting thing was cool because you would like jump off of the guys and do all these crazy flips and...
Well, the way that... I mean, for those who don't know, the Prince of Persia Sands of Time game that came out on the PS2 was just... It was a reboot of the Prince of Persia series because they had done other Prince of Persia games.
In a way.
They did that terrible 3D one on the PC.
Yeah. There was even a Prince of Persia 2 on the PC.
Yeah, I know that.
Which is not very well received.
No, and that's what I'm saying.
It's not very good.
So the Sands of Time was basically they're reintroducing a Prince of Persia style game.
Yeah.
And that was Ubisoft too, wasn't it? Who made this?
Sure.
I think it was.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And so they, you get that game, and just the sense of when you're solving the puzzles and you're going through, like, moving through a level, when you're in the zone... That game feels amazing.
Yeah, when you're just, like, hitting every jump and you're not even, like, backtracking or I gotta hold up, I'm gonna back up, and then jump. You're just like, I'm going. I'm just gonna...
Gotta go.
Yeah.
It's timed.
It's timed.
You just see it. You see everything before it needs to happen. It's like, okay, I'm going to jump right there, and all right there is where I jump to, and then I want to grab that wall. I want to jump to that ledge.
Yeah.
Then I gotta backwards jump over to this pole and grab onto it and then swing.
Stab a couple guys.
And then when you're not in the zone, that
you
game
so
is
much,
unplayable.
You use so much sense of time. The best is, like, it's like, I'm using sense of time, okay, I'm gonna reverse.
And you let go of the button too soon.
You let go of the button too soon, and you're like...
I reversed into this action.
Or you try to reverse and you don't have enough sands and you only reverse like 1 second. You're like, I'm still falling in that pit.
Oh, go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
What was cool about that game with just the story and the atmosphere was that it was kind of lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
The prince was kind of a dick.
Yeah, a little bit.
But like a lovable kind of dick. He wasn't an asshole.
He was a rogue.
He was a charming rogue.
Yes.
And, like, yeah, he was kind of a jerk, and he was kind of pompous, but it was fun. It was like that...
He knew he was good. Like, he might have put forth that, like, pompous face, but he always did... He was doing what was right. Like,
it was like an Errol Flynn kind of, like, feeling. Like, you know, like...
Or I almost felt like a Bruce Campbell feeling.
Yeah,
a
Bruce Campbell feeling mixed with a little bit Dread Pirate Roberts and Princess Bride kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm a swashbuckler.
Swashbuckler.
Rogue.
Yeah, that's why I liked Rogue. It was a little easier.
So, and it's just a fun story, and...
Well, I think the craziest part about the thing that's telling about that game is that I watched you beat that whole thing, play through the entire game, and then I borrowed it from you, and immediately started playing it myself to play through it again, and watch you and beat it myself.
It's just fun.
And then after that, Lou came over to my place and started playing it, yeah. And I watched him beat it on my system, too.
Shoot, I even beat the I think they had the Super Nintendo version in that game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I even beat that on that game. That's just a fun game. Mm-hmm. That's just a fun, really fun platforming adventure. Then you felt like you were in an adventure. And then?
And then they went and cracked the bed with the Warrior Within.
What was funny,
the Emo Within.
Yeah, what was funny was that...
I wanted to like that game.
Sands of Time didn't really sell as well as they wanted it to. It sold well, but not as well as they wanted it to.
It was moderately successful, but critically it was hugely successful.
So what they did in their grand wisdom was like, well, let's throw the baby out with the bathwater, and not even the people who actually liked the game. We're going to take all the stuff that those people bought that game for, which was the fun and...
the platforming, the lightheartedness.
Yeah, the lightheartedness.
And then we're going to... the easy combat, because the combat wasn't complex, but it was simple enough that... It was deep enough that you could do different kinds of moves and, like, handle
it. It taps into this vein. There's certain games that I like that do this, where it's, like... I hesitate to say style over substance, but it was more style. Yeah. It was like, I want to look cool.
It looked cool while I'm killing doing these guys. This stuff. No, I got you.
And that was a game where you looked cool while you're doing
stuff.
Flip
over the guy and cut him in half,
yeah,
and he turned into sand.
There was no like complex, new enemies or every other level. It's like, there's this intelligent AI. It's like, no, I want to look cool when I do this.
Yep.
Right?
And they want to spin off the wall and stab a guy.
Yeah.
I just want to be a badass.
Yeah, there you go, Kevin. So they took all that out, and then they put in all this stuff where it's like, I'm extreme, I'm extreme emo, like, rock music in it.
And they made the combat so much more of a focus as opposed to the puzzle solving, and that was just a mistake. I played through that whole game. I beat that game. And it's just, I was not as satisfied at the end of that game as I was at the end of the first game.
See, it's like, first one, the combat was fun because you looked awesome. Mm-hmm. But the puzzles was the game.
Yeah.
That is what I played.
That last tower, when you're trying to climb up that very last tower. Without the sands and without the, like, there weren't
checkpoints.
Yeah,
that castle was the last boss.
Yeah, that was a motherfucker.
Or a tower or whatever.
Yeah, what's his name? The vizier was not the last boss.
No.
The tower itself was
the
last boss.
I love the fact that not every time you made the same mistake would the exact same thing happen. I remember one time Dan let go or missed a jump. He fell down, and instead of just dying on the next level down, he somehow hit the edge, fell down a hole, and Dan proceeded to fall down this whole tower.
Oh, yeah.
Like something out of a cartoon.
Yeah, just kept on going.
Yep.
A small little thing that I remember liking about that game was that since the story frame... the framing of that story was... ooh, literary term. The framing of that story was that the prince was retelling the story.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's how the Sands of Time made sense, because he would, like, reverse things and stuff like that. And when you would die, instead of, like,
game over thing,
the prince would, in a voiceover, go, no, that's not what happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
that
you would continue.
No, that
was
rad.
It was such a small thing, but it was just like,
little touches like
that
made
little,
that game really
small
good.
Little touch.
Yeah, how could you retell it if he's dead?
Yeah, obviously.
And then there was the terrible third game was even worse, which I never even
two
finished.
Princes? Two something. That's the one where you were the
prince and the dark prince.
You was the emo prince and the evil prince.
And the crazy part is, I liked the prince stuff. The prince stuff was fine, playing as the prince himself. But as soon as you would turn into that dark prince, you have a limited time to get through stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, it limits you, is what it did. It's like, you have to go through this as quickly as possible, otherwise you do not win.
Yeah.
And it's just, why am I playing this? There's no point, because the dark prince is dumb. He's dumb. That game's dumb.
That's a dumb game. Warrior Within.
It was Warrior
your
Within.
Ass.
Yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah. Alright, other PS game. Let's go.
Okay, something I should mention is, first off, role playing games start to get good after a while. I mean, there's a long stretch at the beginning with no good role playing games, and there were about 15 role playing games right out the gate.
Yeah.
And they're horrible ones.
What was the one on the first that came out aside from Summoner? There were two games that came out when it launched. There was Summoner, and there was...
Actually, there's, like, Dark Ring.
That's what I'm thinking of, Dark Ring.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
And then there's also, I think it's, like, Ephemeral Fantasia, where you were a bard, and you played a magic lute guitar.
Oh, yeah.
That you had to play, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a rhythm game thrown into it.
No, it's an RPG with a rhythm game in it.
And it had the same idea of Majora's Mask. you have X amount of time before the world ends.
And you keep going back.
And you keep looping. Yeah. Hated that.
You bought that, though, right?
Yeah, I did. Because I needed a role-playing
game.
Did
you beat it?
No. I got through, like, 5 loopings, and I said, okay, this is now looping to GameStop. Give me credit.
That's the funny thing, because I remember you were always notorious for keeping your games.
Yeah, I
but when you games. Start when you started getting into the PS2 era, I think when you started realizing, you're like, man, I gotta get rid of some of this garbage.
It's mainly, like, I have to buy something, and it's garbage, so I'll keep it for just long enough to get me through.
Yeah.
But then, things start to change. And eventually, this is not the game that changed it for me. Final Fantasy X came out. That opened the floodgates of good role-playing games. But I hated that game. I hate any of... Like I talked about last time, you're a whining kid who misses his daddy, who hates him, and his daddy is a big, giant beach ball of evil.
Was he really a big beach ball?
He's a giant ball of evil. He was Sin. And Sin was a big ball... That would just show up, big, dark, evil energy ball would show up and destroy a place.
It's like that Ang Lee, the Hulk movie.
That you love.
Except for the ending, it's cool. Shut up.
So.
And the poodles.
Nine was the last good Final Fantasy. Yeah. Not 7 and 8. 6, 9. That's it.
Yep. And 10 just is a horrible abomination. Everything felt like crap on it.
What's the character's name in that?
Titus.
Oh, God.
Titus, yeah, with all the stupid and Yuna.
And, like,
yeah, that's when their character design started to look more feminine for their masculine characters.
Yeah, it was just
Titus
more
was,
weird.
Titus was a hot chick.
It was not for us. It's just not... It wasn't... They stopped making games for the Western audience. Yeah, like, yeah. Or I should say that appealed to a Western audience.
Well, we
but what was great
it,
is that opened the floodgates. It's like everyone waits on a console... We wait until Square releases a Final Fantasy, then we'll bring out the good role-playing games. Then you start to get, like, Shadow Hearts, which is still one of... Shadow Hearts 1 and 2, two of my favorite role-playing games. Takes place right around the outbreak of World War... Or, I want to say it's at the end of World War 1. So, right around the... Right around time when Japan is conquering China, you're a guy who... is half Japanese, half Russian, hated by pretty much everyone because of tensions at the time.
Well, Russians, yeah, they hated each other.
And meanwhile, you have the power to pretty much get possessed by evil. And you're going around trying to just live your life, avoiding evil and all of that. And all of a sudden, you get thrown in this weird quest where there's a, pretty much a monk from hundreds of years ago who is immortal, who is on a quest to pretty much destroy the world with evil.
Mm-hmm.
And just an amazing way they tell this game by having it take place in realistic time periods, realistic, like, history around the time. But you just have this good, solid role-playing game, included a wheel system, kind of like, what was... talked about last time, the Gladius.
Gladius.
It had Gladius-like system where when you attack, you had sort of your meter that would move, and you have to stop the meter at the right spot. All of your different abilities and magic would have different meters, mm-hmm. and just solid game.
So was it a turn-based or real-time? So it was real-time combat or strategy?
It is turn-based RPG, except for when you initiate an action. Then okay. you have the little wheel of, I think they called it the Judgment Wheel.
Cool.
And then number two, they continued where number one left off and started to bring in, like, Eastern European and some of Western Europe.
Okay.
You had, like, Russia. You guys see, like, the ending of the line of the Tsar. You had, like, all of these different parts of history. Just really interesting game. And then they kind of butchered it with number three when they...
Who made this game?
I wish I could say.
Interesting.
I am actually going to be looking that up right now.
Well, while Kevin looks that up, another that jogged my memory on another alternative history game is a Japanese game. I don't remember who made it, but it was called Red Ring.
Ring of Red.
Oh, Ring of Red.
Yeah.
Ring of Red.
Yeah, I remember.
Ring of Red. So it was World War II ended, and Japan was split up between Russia and the United States, and there was a bunch of mechs. And here we go. We're going to fight. That was a pretty cool game.
Was it what kind of game was it? RPG?
It was art strategy RPG.
Okay.
Yeah, how you would fight was that you would be on your mech, and it was ridiculous because there was these, and it was like not like mech warrior sleek mechs or something like that. It was like equivalent of, you know, like a Sherman tank now, and then you compare that to like a World War I tank. It was kind of like that. Like, instead of a mech warrior mech, you would have, like, a World War One kind of mech kind of thing going. Anyway, it was just, it looked like they were going to break down, and then your guys were standing on the back part of the mech and, like, controlling it with all of these levers.
So it was like steampunk kind of mech.
Yeah, it was like steampunk kind of thing, and then you would shoot the other guy. I mean, it's pretty simple. There was a lot of stuff to it, but it's pretty crazy, and that story was ridiculous. But
did you beat it?
Nah, I never beat that. I'd get into, like, the middle of it, and I was like, it was more the novelty of, like, you know,
alternate history, if
Japan was split up into a communist and democracy side.
So, Shadow Hearts was from Sacnoth?
Sure.
What?
Sacnoth.
What else did they make?
Shadow Hearts 2.
Are they Japanese? Is it Japanese?
Yeah. And is published by Midway.
Midway?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
a Midway Japanese RPG?
And I forgot, it's actually a sequel.
Somebody had pictures of somebody to get that game published.
Yeah.
Some Midway executive went to Japan. Japan on a trip and got into a promiscuous situation with those developers.
Midway?
And then those developers went, hey, we want to release this game in the U.S. You are going to help us release it. I don't know about that.
Oh, either that or here's a pile of money.
Apparently, Sacnoth made a lot of Neo Geo Pocket cover games.
Sure, why not?
Neo Geo Pocket.
But
all right.
The thing I forgot was Shadow Hearts was actually a sequel of Caudelka on the PlayStation 1, which you were in a house and pretty much think Resident Evil-style house, spooky house. You're doing survival horror stuff of gathering limited ammo, limited supplies, and then you'd go into strategy, like grid-based strategy battles.
Sure.
So,
yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
And somehow that turned into Shadow Hearts, because
it's
Shadow
Hearts,
a sequel.
What else, can you think of any, like, aside from that, what other RPGs were you a big fan of on the PS2?
Suikoden 3 was really good. That's the first one for PS2, mm-hmm. and is also probably the last good one. After that, the series went to crap.
How many more have they made since then?
There's at least 5. I played number 4. I never even touched 5. 4
okay.
was too bad.
Hmm.
And then Wild Arms 3 was pretty good.
Was that good? I remember hearing mixed things about it.
First time I played it for about an hour, and I quit. I didn't touch it again for almost a year. Year after I got it, all of a sudden, I needed a game. I needed a fix. I put it in, thinking, oh, here
we'll
I go
try
again.
It out. Let me give it another chance.
And it took about 3 hours to get into the game enough where it became a game. But once you got into it, it's pretty good. And it's unlike, oh, nerd bad one from Square Enix, or I guess from Tri-Ace, Star Ocean 3.
What ocean?
So,
it's an ocean of stars.
Star Ocean 2 was a great game. Star Ocean 1, I think, was great. I never could play it.
I think Star Ocean 1, in my circle of friends in Hawaii, they really liked it. I never played it.
But. Yeah, and number 2 was great one on PlayStation 1. Number 3... supposedly you just have, 15 hours. Get into 15 hours through the game and it becomes good.
It's just like that BS that they talk about with the latest Final Fantasy. 25 hours in, it gets good. No, if it's 25 hours, that game's terrible.
I mean, I could play through Metal Gear Solid, a good game, in less time than it takes for that to get good. No, yeah. I've got better stuff to do.
So, we're talking about RPGs. So, Kevin, with your love of...
Where are you sending me?
Xenogears.
Oh, no.
What do you think about Xenosaga? Oh. We'll do it brief. You're the only one who's ever really played it. We'll do it brief. We'll keep it like 5 minutes.
Okay, to reiterate, Xenogears, favorite game. I've beaten it more than 10 times. I go back every year or two and play through it. I'm overdue. I haven't beaten that game in a year and a half. Xenosaga.
You're so looking forward to this.
Kept saying, like, Xenogears was episode 5.
You're so looking forward to this.
And Xenosaga was Xenosaga episode 1. And it's like, same guys, they're in a new company now. Square owns the license, so they might have to change a few things, but they'll come in. They'll do it.
Yeah, Kevin, you talked about it all summer.
I was so hyped.
Yeah. You talk about it all summer.
Yep. Yeah, I just went ballistic. I want this game. It's going to be so great. Finally get it, and it's like, okay, maybe it'll take an hour or so to get good.
I remember being there and going like, I don't know about this.
It might take a little time. Play for 10 hours. It'll take time. I see where they're going. It'll take time. Play for another 10 hours. It's getting there. Play for another 10 hours. This is horrible.
I'm already 30 hours
in. And there's the end credits. So then number 2 came out with a promise of it'll be better than number 1. Number 1, we know. We made mistakes.
We shit the bed.
And number two is widely regarded as the worst.
Number two, after shitting the bed, they decide the best way to cover up for that is to shit on the bed.
Widely regarded as the worst.
I played through number two. I actually beat it.
Disappointment.
I have never felt so much like I would be better off just throwing myself off my roof.
So did you ever do episode 3?
No.
Okay.
Question.
I finally learned my lesson.
Question.
It's supposed to be better than 2.
Question. Question, Kevin.
Okay.
For notoriously keeping RPGs, did you trade in these games?
I think I actually kept number... I might have kept both of them.
Yeah.
Should we set these on fire, do a little like cleansing ceremony and exercise the demons?
That's like a it's like a scar. It's like it reminds you of what of a bad time.
So what, whenever he sees that game case, he's gonna be like,
yeah, but he's not gonna like cut off his scar. Never mind, I was going somewhere.
Surgery.
Yeah, he's not gonna get plastic surgery to get rid of the scar. It's there. It happened.
Although at least I could say one thing that made up for it is around this time my family, through weird, inexplicable, my mom learned the internet, all of a sudden we had a British friend. Like this guy,
he'd get you free games.
This guy was so cool. He's British guy, but he lived in Singapore for a long time and had family there. So he would get me what would be legal in Singapore games, which is same way Players brand in pirated games.
Well, this is because you crazy modded your first PS2 with the pop open lid.
I had the replacement top, so it was a pop open.
Remember that?
So you use an easy loader disc, put it in, start the system, then it'll say, okay, swap your game. You open this top loading that didn't get recognized because it's not a real door.
No.
And then you put in your real game, hit start, away you go. It worked so good. Yeah. And then after my original PS2 finally died from too many disc read errors, I had to get a SWIM. You couldn't find a replacement.
Yeah, you couldn't find a regular PS2. Yep.
Yeah.
And the SWIM was a top loader, so
it was fine.
I couldn't.
Couldn't work again.
So it couldn't work anymore?
Then I had to buy a kit with these little plastic pieces. You open your system and attach plastic pieces to cover certain visual sensors and buttons so that when you open the lid, it'd be recognized as being closed. And it wasn't like the PlayStation 1 Q-tip or spring method with one little door detector. There were about 7 of them.
Yeah, Sony's a motherfucker about their copy protection.
They hid them all throughout, including inside the case, inside the tray, everywhere.
Well, because it was a DVD player, so they had those extra copy protection stuff that they had to do with it. So,
Well, and also because of people like us.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
That was a weird Xenosaga was strange too, just because of the crazy like German subtitle that would be
The Nietzsche quote.
Yeah, the
Nietzsche. Will to Mach.
Yeah, Will to Power was the first one.
How about just terrible game? That's what
the other
call
ones.
It.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I think Scheiße was the second one.
Yeah,
Scheiße.
Shiza bed.
No, the second one was Achtung. Warning. Bad game.
Oh, man.
Kaput.
So.
Okay, so let's move on. PS2 games. Just another PS2 game.
Well.
You're like.
You know a great one? Katamari.
Oh, God, yes.
When I first got that, showed up in the mail.
Yes.
Went over John's apartment.
You went over to my house. That was the fun part.
And played through, like, the whole game.
That was the crazy thing, because my apartment, I had the big TV. I had the surround sound system.
You had the couch.
I had the couch. That couch is terrible. I still have that couch. It's still sitting out there. That's the same couch. No, that's not. Never mind.
No, that's not the same
couch. No, you know where that couch is? That couch is still at Lou's place.
Yeah.
But yes, I had that crappy love seat, two-person couch.
You had your chair.
I had my chair and my computer desk. But yeah, you came over once you got that. You got the Japanese version of that game, didn't you?
No, that was English.
Oh, you got the English version. That's right. You wanted to get the Japanese version, but we couldn't find...
No, like... Pretty much that one I didn't know existed until about a month after it came out. I think it's on Penny Arcade. They're talking about this crazy game.
That's right.
And the price point for it was real low.
$20, right?
Yeah. $20, yeah. New game. So I ordered it. Second one, as soon as it came out in Japan, I ordered the Japanese copy.
Right.
And then I bought the English version after it came out.
Yeah. So yeah, you bring over a copy of Katamari and... God, how long did we play? That was hours, just gone
and
again, too.
We tried doing the two-player a little bit, and it's like, that's kind of lame.
We were just fine.
But then
like,
it's one player, and just play through.
Was it like King of the Universe or whatever?
King of Cosmos.
Yep, King of Cosmos.
With his magical rainbow.
And the prince.
He's kind of a dick.
Kind of?
He was a dick.
That's the whole point. He is a dick.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
I
went out drinking and lost the stars.
I just remember you bringing that out, booting that up for the first time, going into that first level and hearing that music start.
That fucking music.
Kills me.
I actually have the soundtrack.
I know, it's so good.
Oh, such a great game. And as soon as you put it in, and it starts with... The opening where showing like the little cartoon animals all dancing and giant mushrooms, and that game was simulating us taking giant mushrooms.
Well, that's the funny thing. Like, we had kind of like fallen out of the Japanese style of game with the RPGs and things like that. But then this game comes out, which is so Japanese, and we just devoured the crap out of that game. I mean, I just remember the first time. When we get to, like, the last level of that game, and you start, you know, this is the point where you start rolling up bigger and bigger stuff.
Then
you're like, okay, I've got
like
the city.
Mountains.
No, you got the city, and then you're like, oh, man, I'm getting bigger and bigger. Wow, I'm getting really big. Okay, I'm starting to pick up, like, whole swaths of land, and...
There are dancing thunder gods in the sky.
There are gods in the sky. I'm picking up continents. And then...
Yeah.
Oh, my God, there's the King of Cosmos. He is watching me pick up the world.
Oh, that game. I still go back and play those. Like, I have We Love Katamari.
I have both of them. I still have both of them for my PS2, so.
And then I also have, Everyone Loves Katamari or something like that.
The 360 one?
360. And I have the PS3 one. Like, I'm addicted.
I played the 360 one and I wasn't, it didn't capture me
it
as much.
It wasn't quite as good.
Okay.
The PS3 one's pretty good.
Is it? Okay. Maybe I'll have to go back and get that.
It's not quite as good as, like, the original, but it comes close.
Those first two games were just so great.
Yeah.
Just the way that they presented themselves, the humor, the...
just overall obtuse weirdness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how satisfying it felt when you finally... When you're in those timed missions and you're rolling up guys, and then you finally get the Katamari big enough that you can start rolling up bigger things...
First time you're picking up children.
What? You start picking up people, and then you're like, okay, I picked up the kids, and I only need a couple of them. And then I can start picking up the people, and the road signs, and the...
Oh, come on, a little more, I could get a sumo.
Yep. See, you had your goals set, and like then you would start picking out your paths as you were walking around
like
each level.
It's like a perfect blend of a action game, just craziness, and puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to figure out, where do I go if I want to get my size best?
Well, yeah, and you would start out as, like, the tiny Katamari, and you're picking up, like, thumbtacks and
like,
rolls of tape.
And, like, snails are pushing you around.
Exactly, and then you get up to this point where you're picking up pieces of the city. Ah, oh, so satisfying.
Tremendous.
That game, it makes you feel insane, but it makes you feel so good.
Mm-hmm. Because of the music, it's just so, it's just happy. Like, even if the king disapproves of you, you still felt happy after you played one of those levels.
Oh, he disapproved even if you beat a level.
Yeah, he would look at your Katamari and go, nah, it's okay.
This is pathetic.
The freaking music, man.
Oh, man.
Katamari.
Oh, God. Just brings back so many happy memories.
It's gotta be said that really, Japanese developed game is the only one that can do something like that, where we have that same memory, just a nice warm fuzzy kind of. I don't know another American game, I don't know a Western developed game that has that kind of like feeling. Like, there's games that I like better than Katamari, but there's not
nothing
that. Yeah, where we start humming that. the freaking main theme.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy that game.
Yeah,
it's a unique experience. I just, like I said, I remember it was finally Kevin getting that game. He's like, "All right, John, I'm coming over. I'm gonna play some Katamari Damacy."
Sure,
okay.
Here it comes. Get ready.
Just losing hours of your life to that game. But no, I think a good one for us to end on, Dan, is the.
Are we ending?
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
About 35 minutes at the most left.
I'm just saying, we had a 3-hour one.
Okay.
No, we gotta go. Okay, what are we ending on?
I think we need to end on the game that started us all down a dark path.
Fuck. So we
had just moved into...
Should we talk about what the origins?
Of
like
how I got it?
At GameWorks?
Oh, yeah, well, okay, so... We're talking about music games, rhythm games. So one of the first ones that I remember playing and really liking was Guitar Freaks in GameWorks in downtown Seattle. And when we would go on, what is that, after like 8 o'clock, they would have like...
It's like Thursday night, like unlimited
play. Yeah, you'd play like $20
to pay.
And then you play unlimited for like 3 hours or something. And we would just play Guitar Freaks and just be bad at it.
With, it's like 3 songs that are unlicensed whatever songs.
Happy Man or something.
Fire.
And we would just play that. And we just thought it was so rad.
Controller.
And it was so hard and kind of dumb. And then...
Secret bonus.
Yeah, I remember reading... about Guitar Hero in a magazine and hearing some stuff about it and going like, man, this is a game I want to buy. I normally don't like buying games that have accessories attached to them because I don't know why. I just
if you think about it, you're like, well, I'm only going to be able to use this for this game.
It's a high cost and also it's big. It takes
a little
lot
personal
of room.
Side. So I remember I took the day off of work, not to buy Guitar Hero, but I just took the day off of work because I was going to watch one of the Harry Potters. I forget which one. Harry Potter 4, 5, something like that. I was going to watch it with Eric, and we were going to watch it at the Cinerama. And I was kind of bumming because, like, I think, like, I had, like, girlfriend trouble or something like that.
Well,
we just
moved into to Bellevue, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like,
so I was just having kind of a crummy day, and I was like, all right, I'm going to watch Harry Potter. It'll be cool. So before Harry Potter, I was like, all right, let's go to this video game store. And I want to get Guitar Hero. So they had Guitar Hero. And it wasn't even famous at that time.
Like, no. This was like right when it came
like,
out.
I don't think anybody really knew about it. I just remember just reading about it, just seeing, ah, that sounds cool. And then going like, I want to spend some money because I feel kind of down. So I went there, watched Harry Potter. That was pretty cool. Went home, unpacked Guitar Hero, and didn't go to sleep until I think 4 or 5 that night.
Well, it was a Friday night, too, wasn't
it? Yeah, so you guys were playing Dungeons & Dragons, and I'm, like, in my...
Only for a short bit, because once I saw you playing...
Yeah,
that,
I was in my room playing Guitar Hero, and I'm just like, oh, my God, this is fucking rad! What the hell is going on?
And then once our game stopped, you came out into the living room...
Yeah.
...on the big TV, and you hooked up, you put in
we
guitar
only had one guitar,
only had
and
one
we
guitar.
Just kept passing it around.
Oh, and then I remember you putting on that game, and, like, we didn't stop. It was literally, like... Non-stop for 6 hours, just playing Guitar Hero.
See, the thing I remember the most is, you know, I called up Bree saying, oh, I'm going to be home a little late from D&D because we're playing Guitar Hero, and she just goes, you're going to get tired of the game. Fuck. And I was like, what? Yeah, I got you that for Christmas. Christmas is in a month. That's what you're getting. That and an extra guitar. And it's like, I'm not going to get tired of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that was the funny thing, because, like, we played it that night, and then I was like, oh, man.
There's not that many songs in the first
one. No. But the funny thing was, like,
they're all covers.
Yeah, all covers.
Yep.
So we played that, and the next day I'm like, I got to get a guitar.
Yeah.
So I went out that day and bought, because they didn't have just the guitars
just
by
the
themselves.
Game.
I had to buy the game and the guitar again. So I had my own copy of Guitar Hero 1. And then the two-player mode.
And it was
began.
Just that dumb two-player mode, though.
It was just
competitive.
Well, it
would
back
switch
and forth,
off,
and
yeah.
you wouldn't play the whole song.
I like Texas Flood. That's my favorite song.
Oh yeah,
I like Texas Flood.
I liked Bad Religion. That was my jam, son.
Oh, Infected.
Yeah, that was the one
Chochi
I was best
was
at.
Good.
That was my That was the one I knew I could beat everybody at. Was Infected. You were Texas Flood.
I hated that Queens of the Stone Age song. I like that song, but I hate playing it on
guitar. The broken rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was harsh.
And then Dealey. Remember Dealey finally getting his hands on that? And
what was that?
Rascal Flatts was his song.
You liked anything that was wussy or annoying.
I like the song, but the fact that he picked it was just so funny.
No, but he also liked that other song that wasn't like a part of the normal.
Yeah,
tracks.
One of the bonus ones that was really whiny.
Where is that two?
Might
is that
two.
Part two?
Might no, that's on number
one.
Okay. Yeah, and he picked the wussy song, and I'd live off of playing good on good rhythm, saying that gets me feeling the energy,
like
and then he'd pick the song, and it's like, I'm failing horribly on this, because this is crap.
I remember staying all night, like, up with Dealey after everybody goes to sleep, and, like, falling asleep playing that game.
And waking up, and he was still playing.
Yeah, that guy was obsessed. I was obsessed about it. We were all obsessed about
yes,
that game.
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
We had Guitar Hero parties.
We had a party,
yeah.
And we had a laptop with a spreadsheet keeping score. Remember
yeah,
that?
We
yeah.
keep score.
We did score attacks, because
yeah.
that was the first game which didn't have the better multiplayer,
co-op.
So in the co-op.
Yeah, so
though.
We would just play a single player, and just whoever got the most score.
So you could play the whole song.
That's what
yeah.
made number two so good, is once they realized, hey, you could play with people.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes.
Oh, man. So many lost
and
hours.
That was,
just...
And that was the dark, dark road
yeah.
into the rhythm game.
Oh.
Guitar Hero, Guitar
I
Hero
remember
2.
Number three sucked,
and then
I think it was
then,
Guitar Hero and Guitar Hero 2 for most of us.
And then Rock Band.
And then Rock Band.
I remember when Rock Band came out, I was taking a day off from work, Dan took a day off from work, and we both went down to GameStop.
Yeah, we bought Mass Effect, and I bought Mass Effect, and you bought Rock Band.
Yeah.
And then I picked up my copy later that day and brought it home.
Yeah, and it was rad.
Until guitars
and
broke.
And the guitar broke, and then the pedal broke.
But, oh, that was
the start
of story.
The rhythm. Yeah, the Guitar Hero. It was all because I was feeling bad about a girl, and I went to go buy this game because I thought it'd be cool.
And
that's the origin.
It was great.
We'll definitely would have gotten into that game eventually. Somebody,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kevin was gonna get it.
But it's just funny that like you bought it that day, and then the next day I'm like, I have to buy this.
Yeah.
Like there was no question about it. I'm like, we need to play this two player.
Yeah.
I have to get
we
another
need
guitar.
Guitars.
And I went to Fry's of all places to get it because nowhere.
We put guitar straps on the stupid plastic guitar.
Well, you had to. You had to wear it like a regular guitar. And those things are so tiny compared to, like...
yeah, compared to the ones now.
Yeah.
You know, though, that's another type of game. It's kind of like with Smash Brothers and Squaresoft role-playing games. I feel like they've moved beyond us. Like, I'll still pick up Rock Band occasionally.
Yeah, we'll pick it up once in a while.
But it's no longer the obsessive, compulsive thing.
I think especially with the Rock Band Guitar Hero thing, it's kind of mined. Like, it's already... it's.
There's nothing else new to come
yeah.
out.
Yeah, there's
I mean, what
2,000
else
songs. There's,
yeah,
you know,
they're still
I think
coming
they broke
out.
4,000.
Yeah, they're
I
coming.
Think
they're
I saw on their Twitter.
I mean, they're coming out with some still weekly DLC.
I actually bought a couple songs. I think 2 weeks ago.
I still buy songs on there, and occasionally I need to go back. Like every few months or so.
Yeah,
Dan H and I go through the store, and we're like, oh, I need to get that. And I
but
need
yeah,
to get that.
What
it's
I do is every few months, I go on Wikipedia, look up the list of downloadable Rock Band songs sorted by date. And then go, all right, what's the last one I bought? Okay, here? Okay, I'll look at everything else came out after.
Yeah, there's just literally nothing else for that game to do. Like, it's, I mean, you can get more complex, but, I mean, that'll take kind of the fun out of it.
And it's really, it really was like the ultimate party game when you got Rock Band and you could get them, get everybody playing it.
Especially in, what is it, 3, when they would have, like, the
three mics and then everything else.
Yeah, you just have a ton of people on there.
Best thing is, you'll have people, no one wants to sing. So, you have Be the Brave One, you know, sing in front of these new uninitiated people, and they're like, oh, hey, Kevin's singing, you know what? Okay, I'll sing next song. And people just get into it.
Yeah. But I think that's a lot of fun. I think that's... Do we want to talk about... Is there anything else we want to talk about with regards to PS2?
Well, we'll come back. We'll come back next week.
Do we want to... Do we want to start delving into the hole that is the Xbox?
Well, we probably have some PS2 things left. But yeah, next week we'll get right into Xbox and, yeah. And then we might actually be almost up to date from where we want to be.
Yeah, and then we can start talking about some new games that we're playing.
Also talk about some of the things we've missed. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone noticed, we only talked about one arcade game, and that was John in the first podcast with Centipede.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, so and then, of course, there's handhelds that we can go
over. Yeah, future episodes we'll have a focus on arcade and handhelds, and maybe we'll break down even smaller stuff.
Maybe some epic fails.
I mean, yeah, we skipped over a lot of games. So
we have, and that's, I mean, that's the whole point. We're just talking about what you just
use. Nothing. But yeah, so so tune in next week for Infinite Lives Podcast. We'll have another one for you. And if you can, please go to our website, infinitelives.us, and also check out our Facebook, which is
facebook.com/infinitelives.
Infinite Lives, not podcast.
No.
Slash Infinite Lives. And then, and we also have a Twitch TV account, which is twitch.tv/infinitelivespodcast, which we're going to try to do some more streaming and all those kind
of
things.
Of which Dan and John should be doing some tonight, which by the time this podcast comes out, yesterday or day before.
Yeah, we're going to try and, like, I think we're going to look at a couple of classic games, maybe.
Yeah, we're going to try to get that up so people can watch us play games and talk over it.
Sure, I know how to say it. So that's really cool, that stream you guys did.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
Remember, like, when John, like,
high scores, I know,
right?
And bad guys.
And ate all that pizza.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening this week, and we'll talk to you next week. Say goodnight, boys.
Yeah. Goodnight, boys.
Blah, 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 blah.